I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not. Call
1-800-FURNACE. B1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Ohio State's a perfect 9-0 on the season. Buckeyes beat Purdue 34-10 this past Saturday. Ohio State's number one in the AP Top 25 for the 11th week in a row. Ohio State's likely to maintain the top spot in the college football playoff when the committee releases their second rankings Tuesday night at 7. Head coach Ryan Day is going to join Buckeye Roundtable tonight around 6:30. In other news, UCLA is leaving the Rose Bowl. The Bruins will play home games at SoFi Stadium starting next season. In the NFL last night, the Chargers beat the Steelers 25-10 at SoFi. Pittsburgh's lost three of their last four. The Browns fell to 2-7 with a 27-20 loss at the New York Jets. And in the NHL, the Blue Jackets wrap up a four-game road trip and look to hold a four-game slide. CBJ Skate in Edmonton tonight against the Oilers. Faceoffs 8:30. We'll have pregame coverage starting at 8 p.m. right here on your home for the Blue Jackets, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Barry here.
Well, Reese came in and he's handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then it's a rundown. And then he said, "You see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me." Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist: Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a snowy Reaction Monday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next 3:10 o'clock. Ohio State and perhaps a change of tone in regard to private equity. We will get you up to speed on what we know coming up at 10 o'clock. 10:30, Austin Ward will join us. 11 o'clock, we will blitz the Buckeyes. 11:30, a little bit of Shelley time as he finds himself, I believe, in Edmonton tonight. I think they did Calgary, Vancouver, and Edmonton, so they'll do Edmonton tonight. So we'll be joined by a little bit of Shelley time from Alberta coming up at 11:30. We do this thing in youth basketball early in the season where if you've coached long enough, you see coaches from other towns that you know. And typically what happens is you start basketball practice the middle of October, and then you have some preseason tournaments early November. We had one for Bootsy and the boys this past weekend. Beamsy goes next weekend, and so they get a little bit of preseason basketball. But in between, your league doesn't usually start until December. And so you try to do some scrimmages if you can find a coach who's like-minded, who's kind of sees things the way you do, so that you can put your kids in situations that maybe they will see in the league that otherwise they wouldn't. So this is something we do every year, and there's different coaches that we do it with. Did it with Beamsy's team on Sunday. We had a four-team scrimmage that we took part in. And one of the things that you'll do is if the opposing team that you're scrimmaging against shows you something you haven't seen before, you will, as a coach, you'll walk out on the court and you'll say, "Okay, coach, can you show me that again? I want our guys to see what you were doing so that we know how to attack it." And then you play again. And then if there's a stoppage, the coach will say, "Coach, what did you do on that out of bounds play? I want to show our guys how to defend that." Those type of things. So why am I talking about youth basketball the Monday after Ohio State played a Big Ten game at Purdue? Because that's what that felt like to me. That felt like a scrimmage. That felt like a scrimmage. It just felt like a youth basketball scrimmage. We're going to work on some things. We're going to do some trickeration in the deep red zone that I don't know if we'll ever use it again. Maybe we put it on film and then it's something Michigan has to prepare for. I didn't really feel like at any point Ohio State put pedal to the metal because they didn't have to. My hunch is if Carnell Tate, if that game was Michigan, Carnell Tate would have played. but they knew they didn't need him. They knew they didn't need him. I did think, as a quick aside, I thought there should have been a little bit more clarity between Ohio State and the broadcast team in terms of why Carnell Tate didn't play. I thought it was very strange that you didn't hear anything until into the second quarter, which led me to speculate that perhaps it was something disciplinary, because usually with an injury, you hear about it. That'll start to whisper out. And usually with an injury, like, coach gets that to sideline person who gets it to broadcast team immediately. And you have that information. Oh, he tweaked something. It felt, we didn't get that till the second quarter of the game, from the BTN crew. But if it was the Michigan, I think he would have played. I think he would have played in the game. I don't think he would have ran to the tight end inside the red zone in the Michigan game. I don't know if you'd have the Lincoln Kienholz package in the Michigan game. I'm not sure. It felt like a scrimmage to me. It's of no fault of Ryan Day's. It's of no fault of Ohio State's. This is just what the Big Ten is putting out for Ohio State to play in the month of November. And you're in this weird spot of knowing that these games are well in hand before they even start, knowing that you really never have to shift out of third or fourth gear the whole time and you're fine. You know, you give up that late touchdown that prevents the cover. I mean, my God, guys, they could have scored 70 in this thing. It's hard to know how to evaluate this team on this. And I think that's the part that's tricky for us right now. Is, for me, watching this thing on Saturday, it felt a little bit like a scrimmage, like a Scarlet and Gray game, like just, okay, let's try some stuff. Let's move it up and down. And there was never a point where there was any sort of concern or worry. And I think we're going to be in a situation where it's going to be a long, by the time we get to the Michigan game, you're probably going to have to go back to, like, Texas to find something where you felt like you were in danger. Texas was in August. Guys, there's snow on the ground. That's a long damn time.
Top 10 Texas.
Yeah, I'll
put some respect back on the Longhorns' name. Austin Ward does snap judgments after the game. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool because he was walking out of the press conference and they had a camera. It was like walk and talk. And yeah. He caught up with Ryan Day, who was about to get into a golf cart, I think, to go back and talk with the team. And he had mentioned that Ryan's son was at Purdue for a recruiting visit. Mm-hmm. And Ryan Day spoke glowingly about the Purdue program under Barry mm-hmm. Odom. And it was at that point I was like, okay, you weren't trying to do anything too disrespectful for the team that your son might play college football for.
Yeah.
And this was the ultimate throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. Because there was a lot of stuff that you could look to opponents and be like, ah, could do that. Mm-hmm. Could have the Lincoln Kienholz package. Could go up the Bison package and just hand it to CJ Donaldson. And there was a lot of stuff like handing the ball to Nate Roberts that you'll just never do again. But you wanted to see if it would work.
How did we get so organized to get the Bison package name ready? I've never heard the Bison package.
It was Dan Hope dropped it on Twitter.
I know he
did.
Hopey. And I'm like, how do we know that we have
the name
right?
Good job out of him.
He just named it.
That's a great name.
It's a great name. Yeah.
I'm all for it. Look, you're not really, us as a fan base are so spoiled that as long as the result's there, 34 yeah. to 10 is the winning result. Nobody got injured. Cause with the Carnell yeah. Tate stuff, you hear it starts to trickle. And Jake Butt, I think, talked about it in the second quarter, like you'd mentioned. And I instantly thought of Jackson Smith and Jigba, mm-hmm. where if it is in fact a tight hamstring, which I think that could be like the only thing that where you wait and see day of yeah. game. How's he doing? How's he coming out of breaks? How's he look when he's running? You go, all right, just keep him on ice because you don't need him now. You need him in December and you need him on the 29th. And I just felt back. I thought back to JSN and like his final season where it was like it was just his hamstring was never right. And you could never right. really properly diagnose those kinds of things. But it's tight. Put some ice on it. Put him on ice.
So I have been a proponent of this season isn't boring. I haven't disliked anything they've done all year. Yeah. I've understood all of it. I did not like Saturday.
Yeah.
Because of, Bo, what you said, it seemed like a scrimmage. It seemed like Ohio State. Not only did they never put the pedal to the metal, I don't even think they ever shifted out of third gear.
No.
I don't even think they
had
tried.
One drive in the third quarter.
And here is my problem with that. And I do think some of the concerns with that game were injuries, right? Like, mm-hmm. I do think, like, not only would Carnell Tate have played if this game mattered, I think probably Josh Padilla would have played. I think probably Philip Daniels would have played. Here's my thing. If you're worried about injuries, get your work in, get them out, and get the backups in. Not only were the starters in the fourth quarter, you didn't put the backups in till the final drive of the game on both sides of the ball, and that drives me nuts. Like, I don't think you get anything out of that game playing it the way you do, and you did. Go ahead. Two strong quarters of work, throw them in for the first drive of the second half. Bing, bang, boom, do your work, get out of there and get the backups in and get them some valuable experience. And it is something that does not happen at Ohio State anymore. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And they did sprinkle, like, the very first drive of the game. Riley Pettijohn was in at linebacker.
He sure was.
I like that, you know, and I like what they're doing with that, with sprinkling guys in. Let's just put the whole package in. Like, I do like seeing Lincoln on the field and getting some time. Let's get it with the backups in a whole drive with him. Give him a whole quarter at the end of the game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I we're at this point that you just trust them and what they're doing. I do think that the thing that's going to be fascinating is, because here's the crazy thing, as we all know, we talked about this last week. This is the first of three like this.
Yeah, this is a copy and paste show next Monday.
Yeah, we're going to be in the same spot.
And the following Monday.
Well, the following Monday, we're not even going to reference
the following,
the game
because following,
we're going to play We Don't Give a Damn for the whole state of Michigan, and we're on. I mean, then that's it. So that one we won't have to worry about. But, yeah, I mean, this is what the Big Ten has done, and it's what they did with the schedule that really doesn't – now, again, a lot of this wouldn't be the case if Penn State would have been Penn State. And they damn near were. They rose up on Saturday, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the program. That is a gut punch loss, but a lot of fight for a lot of really talented Nittany Lions playing Indiana on Saturday at Big Noon. And that's where we are with Penn State, moral victories. But Penn State didn't live up to their end of the bargain, and so now you have this stretch, this massive stretch of games where you're just not challenged. Can that prepare you possibly for Michigan and Indiana? That's what we're going to get into coming up next. In addition to that, Bake called an all-timer Friday night. We'll get to all of that coming up. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you consider yourself a Buckeye fan, you've come to the right place. This is your Heritage Sports Talker and home of Ohio State Athletics. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
How many different ways can you consume morning juice?
Let's see.
Live on YouTube, live on the Fan's HD3 podcast on demand, and on 10TV Plus.
And we'll send Bobby right to your house.
Weekday mornings from 6 to 8.
The Fan.
Hello. I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
An early taste of winter for us today. We will see chances of snow showers throughout the morning into the early afternoon, with daytime highs only getting up into the upper 30s and with windy conditions feeling like we're in the 20s. For tonight, some chances of snow showers, otherwise mostly cloudy skies. Lows in the 20s, but with breezy winds, we feel like we're in the teens. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
It's Reaction Monday, where our highly trained experts talk football.
Sponsored by The Roofing Guys.
Your home for reaction and overreaction. The Fan. The friends are the guests and listeners. Reeser and Baker just work here.
Back to work. Everybody. Work.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Man, did you guys hear that the traffic report right in between us and Brother Bone and Tyvus? 12 accidents this morning with the white stuff floating around. Lots of school closings. My approach to first snow is a lot like teaching, and I'll just keep with the youth basketball analogies for a moment. It's like teaching a new offense to young kids. First time, just walk. Just slower is always better. Slower is always better for snow. Get your feet under you a little bit. Settle down. Go slow. No one's in that big of a hurry. Settle down. Everybody go 10, 15 miles an hour slower. Control yourselves a little bit. Just because you have some sort of four-wheel drive. And I grew up on driving on icy roads and all that stuff, so I feel like I have a pretty good handle on it. A lot of people don't. A lot of young drivers, a lot of new drivers. Just ease off a little bit. What was your guys' experience on the roads this morning?
It's kind of chaotic.
Yeah.
And because it's mostly because people just don't slow down. Like, everybody still acts and behaves mm-hmm. like you can just go in a 45. You can go 50, and that's just, it isn't the case. Even so, the route we have in front of the building mm-hmm. is 25. Nobody goes 25 on Never. Twin Rivers Drive.
Never.
Like, there are only a handful of people I ever see go that. And so when I'm going 25 on this thing, because it's a little slick, but also I've got a, you know, quick turn in, and yeah. you're getting, you know, three or four cars behind you that are, they want to go 50. It's like, guys, you can't do that here.
Mm-mm. So I don't think the roads were bad this morning, except for like bridges and overpasses obviously will freeze, yeah. but the pavement temperature was enough that it was not sticking on the pavement around mm-hmm. here. Like, so the roads were wet, obviously. My drive-in seemed to be just about 5 miles an hour slower than normal, unless you yeah. were going on a curve or mm-hmm. something. So I didn't think it was too bad, quite frankly. I didn't see anything.
I will say this about the Twin River Drive, because it goes 45 to 25.
Yeah.
At the light, it goes 45. Crossover. Yeah. So this is probably a dozen years ago. I'm coming down, and I'm decelerating from 45, and this was before they added that street that's right before mm-hmm. the light.
With the light.
Before that went in there. And so I'm coming down, and there was a lovely Ohio Highway Patrol guy. I don't even know why he was there, but he was waiting right there for me, and he got me going 37 or 36 and a 25, something like that. And I'm like, I'm going right there. I'm right there. Ticket. Pinched me. That was it. So you're right. Nobody goes 25 on Twin Rivers ever, but I was the one who got God.
It's actually a miracle he doesn't sit there more often.
Well, you could do it all day long.
I mean, he's just right.
You do it all day long.
Yeah, I don't ever see officers in that yeah. area. And they should be, because, yeah, there's...
You'd write tickets all day.
When you cross over Dublin Road onto Goodale, or not Olentangy River, you cross mm-hmm. over that to Goodale, like, there's a bike pathway that goes downtown or goes north. Like, there's a lot of pedestrians that cross that, and people mm-hmm. still just ignore it and act like it's still a 45 all the way through in every direction. So I do wonder, like, maybe they should have a cop or two sitting here.
wouldn't be the worst thing. Bake, you had a moment Friday. You had a moment. You were on the call for DeSales. Obviously, you knew that RJ was playing the game. Ryan Sun's the quarterback for DeSales. We all know that. You knew it was going to be a competitive game. I remember you talking about it last week. But you got competitive squared in this one, buddy.
Yeah, it was a fun one and an all-timer for sure. RJ Day throws for, and RJ Day is junior quarterback at DeSales. Mm-hmm. He started since he was a freshman, since day mm-hmm. one, and he has every DeSales passing record there ever was, because DeSales ran a triple option for years.
Right. Yeah.
And so he owns every passing record. Mm-hmm. He threw for a school record 482 yards. Jeez. Friday night against Ashland. It was a game that DeSales was leading, Bo, 23-14 at halftime. Mm-hmm. They went on a 15-play drive to start the second half. Mm-hmm. Took up almost 8 minutes of the clock. They fumbled at the 1 yard line.
Oh, so going in, would have been cooked. Would have been 30-14, game over.
So
yeah.
Ashland, 3 plays later, throws a 76-yard touchdown pass, and we've got a game.
Wow. Ashland Arrows, right?
Correct. The Fighting Mark the Sharks.
Yeah, right.
So DeSales ends up, they kick a field goal on their next drive. Ashland scores again. Their quarterback is a horse. 6'6", 240 pounds.
Wow.
Has like a 60-yard run to the 2-yard line, and then they punch it in. So they've got the lead. DeSales gets the ball down 3 with 2 minutes to go, and they have it on their 10-yard line because they have a miscommunication. Two guys run into each other on the kick. So the kick hits the ground, bounces back up into the one kid's arms, gets tackled at the 10. RJ throws a 3-yard touchdown pass with 5 seconds left in the game to Jordan Carhoff, who was also a junior and has mm-hmm. offers from Alabama, Ohio State, everyone. He's a 6'4", 225-pound yeah. tight end, defensive end. He was actually at the Penn State game mm-hmm. last week on the sidelines doing a visit. he just jumps over the defender, you know, 6'4 against 6 foot. 6'4 wins a lot of times when you throw it high. And it was just what an awesome moment and an awesome end to that game. And it was pretty fun. And that sets up a massive game this week with DeSales hosting Massillon. That's two state powers here at DeSales.
Oh, boy. And you were saying off air, you were saying they took yours and put it on the big screen at Paul Brown up in Massillon.
Yeah, so Massillon beat Hoover like 62-7. Running clock, right. Game was over early. And it was kind of big for them because they either host Ashland or they travel to DeSales this week in that game. So they put the call up on the scoreboard in Paul Brown Tiger Stadium, and everybody was listening to it. And obviously they weren't happy that DeSales won because that meant they have to travel to Columbus Friday night. But
oh, and travel they will.
Yes.
And travel they will. They'll the whole town
have, they'll probably have
here.
More than the Ashland Arrows did in the stands.
They may have more than DeSales. They'll whatever stands are available will be taken. Will be taken. Yeah, I guarantee there was probably, I mean, that how many does Paul Brown up there hold? 5,000 or 6,000? It's a big stadium.
I thought it was a little more than that. I thought it was close to 10 because they've done state championships there quite a bit.
They usually do. Yeah.
They used to they used to split them between there and Fawcett, and then they held some there, and now obviously they're all at Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium. But
let me see, what is capacity at Paul Brown in Massillon? Oh, 16,600.
Oh, so it's even bigger than I thought.
It's quite a bit bigger than we thought. Yeah. And you want to talk about it. But that also speaks to what happens in the high school football. It's chaos. It's a play here, play there. The nerves come up. You get a fumble, you get this. And it's a beautiful thing. That is a massive one on Friday night, DeSales and Massillon here. And Ryan's going to be able to see it very easily because his team's at home against UCLA on Saturday night. So I know he was at the game on Friday, but this is an easier one, right? You just you sleep in your own bed Friday night.
For sure. I think if I heard correctly, Ryan went with the team to West Lafayette, then came back to watch the game, and then went back.
Yeah.
And I just all kinds of things.
Yeah, that's awesome. The thing that, and as I mentioned, it's UCLA this week, and then it's Rutgers, and then it's at Michigan. And this is going to be kind of a part of a bigger conversation. When the schedule was dropped, and you looked at it, you had these benchmarks that were kind of all split up. But because Penn State wasn't what we intended Penn State to be, or what Penn State intended to be, you now have this situation where you are multiple point favorites, three, four score favorites over and over and over again. The closest number we had since Texas was 1.5, Washington was 7.5, Illinois was 15.5. And so that's as close as any of these games have been expected to be all season long. And you're going to get more of that this week. I haven't even looked yet at UCLA. My hunch was, what did we say? 24.5 is what we were thinking it would be. But after Nebraska beat them, it might end up being even more. Have you guys even looked at it?
31.5.
Oh my God.
So that's what happens when Nebraska and a backup quarterback beat you.
31.5.
So.
That's probably too much, isn't it?
Well, a game for Ohio State, they had covered every game until Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
And then that touchdown late is your backdoor cover. The Buckeyes were the best team against the spread this season. Still are, but
yeah.
30.5 against Purdue, and you win it like 70%, it seems like, and you still almost covered.
Yeah. So that's where we need to, that's the challenge for Ryan Day and his staff. How do we make sure that we are pedal to metal for the 29th? How do you do that when you're 4.5 touchdown favorites every single week? That's the challenge. In addition to that, the Buckeyes with dueling Heisman campaigns. I know I got two emails on Saturday night, Reese. I'm guessing you did as well. We will get to all of that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE. Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, here's what's up on a Reaction Monday. The Buckeyes cruise in West Lafayette against Purdue in what felt like a glorified scrimmage. How does it prepare for Michigan? I don't know. This is one of those things we have to trust, and we should. The guy's won a higher percentage of his games as anyone during at this point in his career. He just won a national championship last season. And so you have to trust that they know exactly what they're doing with this team. Because there's no real beef you can have coming out of it. You can talk about the gadgety stuff and some of that stuff was mildly annoying to me, I suppose, because I don't think you're going to hand it to a tight end against Michigan. But at the same time, I don't know what I would do if I were in their spot. I'm like Bake. I liked your plan, like bury him early and then cruise in the second half. That has not been the approach all season long. Once a game is for sure in hand, kind of just take the foot off the pedal a little bit and go from there. And it's about being efficient. And honestly, if we don't get the interception in the third quarter, then this thing looks a lot worse than even it was. And you get the cover and all those things. You get red zone interception and that kind of changes it a little bit. This was Ryan post game with Paul and Jim on the efficiency he saw from his team.
Efficiency is what we're looking for. And when you do that, we've got to finish off drives like we did a bunch today. But then also, we had the two drives there in the second half where we were efficient and controlling the game, turn the ball over once and then kick the field goal. And so that was only 3 points. So there were times where we got to be explosive in the game. But, overall, I thought, we played complimentary football and it was a good team win.
Here is Ryan on his team's approach versus the Boilers on Saturday.
Businesslike. They're growing up every day. Like I've said before, I think they're edgy. They're competitive. They've bought into the system. They care about each other. I think they have an edge to them. Like I said, I think that's probably the biggest thing. But businesslike. They know what they want to get done. They have perspective. They've seen it. They know what it's supposed to look like. And so now we got to get back to work this week and practice and continue to do it again next week against UCLA.
I think the greatest trick that they seem to be pulling off each week is getting this team to ignore the opponent and to prepare every week. They're humans. They know you're looking at scoreboards. You know what's coming in here on Saturday. And so how do you make sure that you take care of yourself? It's because they're competing against themselves. They're competing against history. They're trying to be it. I'm sure you picked up on this on Saturday. Lots of people talking about the first Big Ten team to repeat as national champions, right? Like that's starting to be bandied about. You think about the idea of going 16-0 and winning a national championship undefeated. This is heady stuff that this team is putting on its bulletin board. And to do that is still a lot of season left in front of you. So that, I think, has been their mindset all season long, has been that. But it also, because of the schedule, again, of no fault of their own, they did something on Saturday that they have not done, and that's an impossible thing, which is run a two-minute drill. They actually ran one.
They had timeout. I was so happy.
It's like, oh, man, we can practice.
Wow.
Here's Ryan on running the first two-minute drill of the season on November 8th.
In the first half, we get the turnover, we score, that was great. And then defense, we try to win the middle eight. Defense, does a good job, gets a stop. We call timeouts, get the three and out, we get the ball, and then move it down the field and kick the field goal. Like that was kind of the really first two-minute drill we had to work in a game, which is one of those other things we wanted to make sure that we improve on. And I thought that was well done. Guys had pretty good awareness. We were getting out of bounds. Julian was, the protection was good. Like all that was done well, and then put Jaden in that spot. Like, come on, man, we got to make this field goal. He did. He stepped up. Protection was good, and he pounded it. So that was great for him, and it's going to be important for his confidence to know that we're going to need those as we move forward.
Folks, you're 9-0. You ran a 2-minute drill for the first time in game 9. This is where you're at. This is where they're at. I mean, he manufactured a circumstance. I was surprised he didn't manufacture one against Penn State.
They tried running the draw to CJ and he fumbled it. And then that was kind of the end of it. And what was a 17-7 game that could have been 24-7 would have been different. So I guess they probably were trying to run a 2-minute. They were just trying to do it with a draw play to CJ with the first play. And that led to the fumble. And then now all of a sudden you have a 17-14 game. And you have a little bit of sense of urgency, but this was truly that. This was, hey, let's go get some points. And they did. They went down, got into field goal position, kicked a field goal. You're going to need that against Michigan. You're going to need it against Indiana. I promise you're going to need it in the playoff. You won't need it the next couple of weeks, but at least that was some circumstantial football that you could lean your head on a little bit.
A career-long 49-yard field goal from Jaden Fielding. So I think that was as perfect of an end of a half as you could have asked for, because Ryan told you right there, everything his quarterback did, everything the offense did, showed you that they have great situational awareness. And I think for Ohio State fans that are wanting a little bit more, I certainly understand that. But the stat of the game for me is that third quarter drive that ends in a red zone interception. Of course, you'd like to have that back. You'd like to you'd like for Julian to just run out of bounds maybe or do something else to keep the drive alive. But that drive itself, 15 plays, 68 yards, 8 minutes and 34 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's going to be this week against UCLA and next week against Rutgers is exactly that. Is exactly what the coaches want to do is just that, because it means when you tally all of this time of possession up, and I think the Buckeyes were like 40-19 in terms of time of possession over the Boilermakers, like Ohio State's going to have played in terms of time of possession. They're going to have possessed for so much longer, but played so little snaps compared to other seasons because it keeps them fresh for that playoff run that they want to go on.
It's a great point in that you have to capitalize, though, when you do, when you play that way, when you shorten the game like that, you have to put points on the board. Now, Ohio State was already up. It didn't matter in that situation in the third quarter.
Yeah.
That was the one time we've seen Julian look like a freshman there, which is pretty good from him. And I think that's one thing we all keep forgetting. Like, man, this kid's only played 8 games in college football, but we just talked about it in that game that I called Friday night.
Yep.
If you go on long drives like that and you don't score, like, it hurts momentum wise. And Ohio State was in a good spot; they already had a big lead. It's all nitpicking, and we've said it forever, and we're going to say it for 2 more weeks, right? It's all nitpicking with this team right now. It's, can you do this, and we'll do this later, can you do this against Indiana, can you do this against Alabama, or will stuff like that come back to bite you? But we also saw an Ohio State team that last year that didn't play like this in the playoffs.
No.
They may have during the regular season. They did not in the playoffs.
This team's level is so much higher than last year's team level. Last year's team didn't hit their level until Tennessee. That's when it was like, oh, that's who we thought we were going to see. They didn't hit that level until Tennessee. This team has played at that level kind of all year. I mean, you talk about it. I think they've covered every week now except 2 out of 9. Good teams win, great teams cover. And this one, they could have in their sleep. They could have covered this one. I mean, it's 473 yards to 186. And how many of the 186 came on the last drive for Purdue, right? So it's like, it's one of those things where this is such a dominating 34-10. And this goes to kind of what I was talking about last week in terms of you're going to be playing in a closet. Nobody talked about this. I don't know if you guys watched like college football the rest of the day, but when I got home from the lacrosse, and by the way, thank you, Buckeyes, for putting this thing out of reach so that I could go watch Beamsy play in Canton for the lacrosse, which was awesome. Ran into Bob's kid as well, which was cool to see at court and everything. It was awesome. But because this thing was well in hand, you're able to do that. And then you come back and watch the second half on DVR when I got home. But if you watch college football the rest of the night, there was no talk of this. There was no talk of it. In fact, the only real talk around the Buckeyes on the rest of the night in college football revolved around the Heisman campaigns. And this was a fun moment that both Julian and Jeremiah had. Let's have a listen.
No, that's Julian saying trophy right there. The Heisman goes to Julian saying.
Who's your Heisman pick?
Jeremiah Smith. I mean, the guy's special. He's a great player. And you know, I don't know his stats today, but he had a great day and was making some great catches. Had the one touchdown catch. So he's a special player.
Is there any scenario? I mean, there is a scenario where they're both not at the Downtown Athletic Club, and that would involve losses to Michigan and Indiana. But other than that, short of that, it feels like they're both going to go there. I feel like Ty Simpson, if he can win out, is going to be somebody that's going to be able to make a lot of noise in this thing. I think there's going to be an incredible push from Notre Dame with Jeremiah Love, but their schedule, I mean, they basically played a whole season of the next month for Ohio State. I mean, it's just been nothing after those first two games. They do get Pitt this week, right? So at least they get a ranked opponent this week, finally. So you'll hear a little bit of that. But it's going to be hard for these two guys both not to be there if they keep this up. And I love the selflessness of it. I do wonder, though, Reese, and you've been voting a long time as well, I do wonder if they'll end up canceling each other out.
I think there's part of that. Certainly the Ty Simpson thing gives me pause when you talk about having both of those guys on stage for the Heisman Trophy ceremony. Like, those two are, you know, maybe Ohio State's got three or four players. Texas Tech's linebacker, whose names escape me right now, hit a fun pose. And so you'll get talk from that corner of the country about how he should be involved in the conversation. So the campaigns are starting from different ends of different parts of the country. And this thing is very regionalized. So you're going to get over the next couple of weeks zero national participation for Julian Sain and for Jeremiah Smith, unless they can make more catches like Jeremiah when he's sitting on the ground, like the defensive back tackles
him every week
and he still catches it. Like, those things will help. But also with what Fernando Mendoza's doing. And I know there's a lot of consternation from Buckeye fans about how Gus just gave him the award after his receiver taps the one toe in the end zone to spring Indiana to their first win at Penn State. But those are the kind of moments. But Ohio State will get there, and Julian Sain and Jeremiah Smith, come November 29th, will have the opportunity to get right front and center of all the voters' minds, because everyone's going to be watching that game between Ohio State and Michigan.
Well, in the next week, it's going to be number one versus number two.
That'll also help.
Very likely.
Real quick, universe, college football gods, Bo did not say what he said earlier. He did not mean to throw that out in the atmosphere about those two games at the end of the year. I just want to make sure that was clear. It was all in jest. None of that was real. So, universe, college football gods, pay no attention to what he just said. The thing that worries me a lot for these two Ohio State players and their chance to win the Heisman is not only that they have each other on their team, but the other names you're hearing in this are Ty Simpson and Fernando Mendoza. So you have voters in the Midwest that may be giving votes to Fernando Mendoza that normally would have went to Buckeyes. And that thing is very concerning to me. It almost feels like, just because of the regionality that Reese talked about with this award, it almost seems like to me that this is Ty Simpson's to lose right now, just because of that fact.
Yeah, I think you're going to be able to put the Mendoza stuff to rest in the Big Ten championship game should you get there. Like, you can shut the door on that in a hurry by dominating him. But yeah, if Simpson can get there at 11-1 and SEC champs, I mean, you're talking about three candidates up here and just one down there. So that's part of it. The Big Ten did itself. You want to talk football gods? The football gods are not kind to the Big Ten if you're trying to get four teams into the college football playoff. We'll explain coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
We used to have a billboard with our host's face on it, but only ugly people work here now.
You mama say you ugly, hey!
The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Hey, what's up? It's T-Bone.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Your new Columbus home for the Jim Rome Show is The Fan 2.
Catch the live experience weekdays from 3 to 6.
Just one requirement: have a take and don't suck. The Fan 2, Columbus's home of the Jim Rome Show.
Hey, what's up?
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And Guest Hotline is sponsored by Carpenter Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electric, and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan.
With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
You don't have to look far for conference bias amongst AP voters, college coach voters as well, but really in the AP voters. You guys remember what happened when Tennessee, did they lose to Vandy? Tennessee, I think Tennessee lost to Vandy.
Are you talking about this season?
Yeah, this year. Last week, Tennessee lost. Oklahoma. Good job. Thank you, Reese. Tennessee lost to Oklahoma last week to drop to 3-3 in conference and 6-3 overall. For some reason, they ranked 13th in the country, Tennessee was. They lost and stayed in the rankings. With a loss, now 6-3 in the league, they stayed in. What happened to Iowa? Losing at home on essentially the last play of the game against Oregon. Vaporized. And if you watch that game, Iowa's good. They're good. Moore put them on his shoulders. He made an all-time throw down the sidelines, and Oregon won the game. But Iowa had scored just before to go ahead to win the game. And now what do you see with Iowa in the rankings? They're gone. So what's the point of all this? Well, the point of all this is that if the Big Ten is going to get four teams into this thing, and I still think there's two chances, one I want to talk about, the other one I don't. The one I want to talk about is USC. USC hammered Northwestern on Friday night. They get Iowa at home this weekend. Then they're at Oregon. If USC beats Iowa, I think this is the easiest, surest path, beats Iowa and can upset Oregon in a close game, I think they'll both get in. And then they got to take care of UCLA in their last game of the year. But I think a two-loss USC and a two-loss Oregon both get in. The other one is the one I don't want to talk about, but you can. Here are the teams with one loss or fewer in Big Ten play: Indiana, Ohio State, USC, Oregon, and Michigan. That's it. That's the list. So you can draw your own conclusions to that. The worst result of this weekend for this league was Wisconsin beating Washington.
Brutal.
Washington, it's brutal, Bake. And here's the deal. Washington at home versus on the road are two entirely different teams. They haven't figured it out. I can't imagine what the travel burden has been on them, but look, they looked at a map when they signed up for this and they know what it was. But if you just look at what they are away from home, barely getting by at Maryland, 24-20, losing at Michigan, 24-7, and then losing to Wisconsin this weekend, 13-10, in which if you saw this game and I was watching the end of it, if you didn't, and I don't blame you, the leading passer for Wisconsin was the punter. Wisconsin, that's right. Wisconsin beat Washington 13-10 while going 6 of 18 for 48 yards through the air. That's an inexcusable loss for Jed Fish's Huskies. It can't happen. It's impossible.
Did you just call Washington the Cleveland Browns?
We'll get to them. It just can't happen. You can't lose a game like that. Like, I'm really happy for Luke. He needed it. He got the vote of confidence.
They stormed
midweek.
The field.
Yeah. Well, they haven't had a whole lot to cheer for, Reese. I mean, give them their flowers a little bit. They're at Indiana this week, for crying out loud. But that's it. This was a really bad weekend for the Big Ten. If the Big Ten, and some of its perception, like what happened to Iowa, I think is Bush League, for Iowa to drop out of the rankings after losing like that to Oregon at home, where it's end of the game situation. I think that's brutal to lose a game, to lose out, drop out of the rankings like that. Cause I think Iowa's really good, but there are inherent biases against this league, the middle and bottom of this league. Some of it's warranted that it's really hard to shake.
I do wonder what the result's going to be from the committee tomorrow. Cause I think they're 7-8 Tuesday night. If, cause I was not even in the others receiving votes of the AP top 25. If the committee looks at that and says, well, it's a close loss to a really good Oregon team, you don't vaporize them completely from the top 25, but that'll be of many things interesting, because I look at the Big Ten as a three-bid league, and I think the only way, everything you said is valid with USC and a close win over Oregon. I do think maybe if Texas Tech and BYU meet up again in the Big 12 title game and Texas Tech wins, there's a chance that the committee could say, all right, BYU, come on, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
If they lose a second one, and that might open the door for another Big Ten team. Because there's, for me, the ACC is getting one, is the conference champion. The SEC, probably four. But the Big Ten, if they also get four, I think it would have to come from the Big 12 just not being great.
This is why I hate and have always hated an expanded college football playoff, because we're arguing about your losses. And what I'm about to do right now is what I absolutely hate. Mm-hmm. Iowa has lost by 11 points to number two in the country. to number 7 in the country in a rivalry game early in the season against an Iowa State team who at the time was ranked 16th. Mm-hmm. This is why I hate it, because we're arguing for three lost teams on who has the best losses. It's
Buddy,
gross yep. to me.
It is gross, and it's even worse than that. Did you see what the AP did with Oregon?
Well,
they dropped them.
They dropped them.
Yeah.
They went to Iowa, who was ranked what, 20 in the college football playoff poll. They went to Iowa and won and dropped from 6 to 7. Ole Miss.
They beat the Citadel, Bo. Come on.
Ole Miss played the Citadel at home and won 49-0. The voters are like, oh, God, move them up a spot.
And Texas, got to put them in the top 10.
They went up 3. They were off.
Yeah.
This is where.
Good bye week for the Longhorns.
This is where we let our perception of teams, and you talk about the way too early college football AP mm-hmm. poll matters. These things do matter because we let our perception get in the way. Like, Indiana beats Penn State for the first time ever on the road, and it's a gutsy win, and Fernando Mendoza has a Heisman moment. Oregon's supposed to blow out Iowa. Iowa's no good. Oregon's way better than that. That's not a good win for Oregon, but in fact, they're the exact same win, and Oregon's might be better because Iowa's probably better than Penn State.
Yes, they are. And I think they play coming up here, don't they?
But it's all this perception of what we think. Like, Indiana's still a basketball school to all of us, mm-hmm. so the fact that they beat Penn State, that's huge.
There is an inherent bias against the middle of this league. There is. And there's no shaking it. And the Oregon example is the best. They dropped a spot for going to... Just think of their travel to get to Iowa City. Just think of the travel of that. Their fans, support all of it. I'm guessing, obviously, they charter, but like, what do we? And Ole Miss gets to play at home against the Citadel, and they move ahead of them. Why? What did you see from Ole Miss this weekend that makes you go, yeah, they got to be ahead?
The only thing I saw was that field proposal that Lane Kiffin crashed. I didn't watch a minute of that game, but yeah, that was the highlight from it.
That really was. A story over the weekend from Ross Dellinger on the private equity conversation between the Big Ten and Ohio State and the rest of the league, and why USC and Michigan are on the outs and why Ohio State isn't with them. We'll tell you what we know on it coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Common man, a radio veteran, has a large hemorrhoid. Timmy Hall, a good clean boy. Moonlight's as man's hemorrhoid. Common man and Timmy.
Weekdays at 3.
The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Number one, Ohio State's a 31.5-point favorite. Buckeyes will host UCLA this Saturday night at 7:30. Buckeyes are 9-0 on the season, thanks to a 34-10 win at Purdue this past Saturday. Ohio State's Ryan Day will join Buckeye Roundtable tonight at 6:35. Speaking of UCLA, the Bruins will reportedly leave the Rose Bowl next year. 24/7 Sports says the school has agreed to a $60 to $80 million buyout with the city of Pasadena that'll allow them to play games at SoFi Stadium starting in 2026. In the NFL last night, the Chargers beat the Steelers 25-10 at SoFi. Week 10 wraps up tonight at 8:15. The Packers host the Eagles. And in the NHL, the Blue Jackets skate at the Edmonton Oilers. Face-off there is 8:30. You can hear it on The Fan with coverage after Buckeye Roundtable. This update sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Mark Levy's office at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP. That's 1-800-MORE-SLEEP. Or visit him online at sleepbettercolumbus.com.
Taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Sometimes when I have these conversations about the future of college football, I feel a little bit like the dude in the Big Lebowski. There's a lot of angles to this, man. A lot of ins and outs. Like, that's kind of what I feel like, because there are so many levels to trying to guess where all of this is going to go. One of the things that has been a big topic of conversation the last month or so around the sport has been this notion of private equity coming into the Big Ten. We know publicly that the University of Michigan had no interest in this. The University of Michigan, there was a board of trustee member who called it essentially a paycheck loan type of a situation, a get rich quick scheme, take the money now and then deal with the problems later. Michigan has not wanted to be any part of it, and USC hasn't wanted to be any part of it either. It has always been my belief that Ohio State did not want to be a part of it either. And I said so about a month ago that I did not think that Ohio State wanted any part of this. And part of the reason I said that was I didn't know why Ohio State would want to tie themselves to some of the dregs of this league for the next 20 plus years, right? Like, are you sure you want to be in business with some of the bottom of this league for the next 20 years just because you've done it previously? And my hunch was that while Ohio State was feeling very similar to the University of Michigan and USC on this, they were letting University of Michigan and USC take the lead on it. I think some things have changed. I think some things have changed for Ohio State. And this is coming on the heels of a Ross Dellinger report on Yahoo Sports that the Big Ten has signaled to Michigan and USC that it plans to move forward with a $2.4 billion capital deal. Michigan and USC face a tentative deadline of November 20th before it may vote to extend the grant of rights without all members. The 20-year deal is reportedly with the California pension fund called UC Investments and extend the conference grant of rights an additional 10 years. So what UC Investments is proposing is to buy 10% stake in the league's new business offshoot, Big Ten Enterprises, at a $2.4 billion cost. That deal, according to Dellinger's reporting with the Big Ten, not only would infuse billions in upfront payments to schools and average $135 million a school, but requires an extension of the grant and rights established for nonprofit business subsidiary, blah, 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 blah. So here's what I think changed from the Ohio State perspective on this over the last month or so. I think what Ohio State is looking at this as being in the driver's seat of this conference. One of the things Dellinger reports here is that Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State are going to get a bigger cut of the profits than everybody else. One of the other things that this probably allows would be for Ohio State to have true leadership and to drive the bus on where this thing goes over the next 5 to 10 years. And there will be another round of conference expansion, conference super conferences, which will probably happen in the early 2030s. And this would allow for Ohio State to be at the forefront of that. They're going to get more money. They're going to have a bigger say. I will tell you, I still don't like this. I don't like signing up for anything until 2046. I don't have an interest in that. I still do not have an interest in being in this type of league with some of the bottom of this league until 2046, just because we've been with them the whole time. Like, we're going to blow the whole damn thing up. Well, then let's just blow it up. But this goes to a conversation that we had last week in terms of, as a fan, what are you comfortable with from a football perspective? Because this is all football. It has a lot to do with the non-revenues in terms of the influx of cash that will come in. But from a football perspective, this month that we're dealing with right now, you're essentially signing up for that for the next 20 plus years, is to have stretches of the schedule like the one that you're in right now. And if Ross Bjork or Top Gun Ted or Tony Petitti, if anybody comes out here and says that this influx of cash will elevate the bottom of this league, it will not. It will not elevate the bottom of this league. We have a decade plus of proof of that with Rutgers and Maryland and Nebraska. It did nothing for any of them financially. Nothing. It did not change their football product in any way, shape, or form measurably. None of them are better off now than they were when they joined. They've lined their pockets with cash, but they have not improved their football product in any way that is measurable. None of them. None of them have. You know how you flip football now? You hire a great coach and you motivate and get boosters who are locked in the way they've done at Indiana. That's the way you do it now. The idea that this money is going to prop up the Purdue's, the Rutgers, the Maryland's of the world, it's nonsense. And don't let them tell you otherwise, because it won't do anything for that. So positively, from the Buckeye perspective now, they're going to, if this goes through, and it seems like it's going to, you're going to drive the bus on what the Big Ten looks like over the next 25 years. That's your positive. Negative, you're signing up for what we are experiencing this year with Ohio State football, which is these stretches of games that are just nonsensical games. And you're going to sign up for more of that if you sign up for this thing. And you're also signing up for really being under control until 2046, a portion of your profits being under control until 2046, which is hard. Hell, I'm not going to be alive in 2046. I'd be shocked if I make it that far. So I don't know what my beef is, but that's the way that I understand it, is that certain things have changed from their perspective, and basically the league is going to follow Ohio State's lead on this.
So this whole thing's gross, yeah, because for Ohio State, you don't need it. Michigan and USC, I think, in some of this back and forth, have been threatened to be left out of a large chunk of change when this gets signed. But I look at it as maybe this is an opportunity. And it does, all signs seem to point to Ohio State in wanting to do this, which I hate. Yeah. But if Michigan and USC want to hold firm, maybe there's an out for both of those schools in the conference. If the Big Ten wants to go in one direction and they want to sell their souls to this private equity thing, Michigan and USC can step back and be like, all right, maybe we'll go independent for a time, see how that works out for us. And I would love Ohio State to go in that direction relative to the PE investment thing, well, to 2046, because what they're going to want, this investment group, is they're going to want an increase on profits year over year. Mm-hmm. Where are those going to come from? You might be asking yourself. Look in the mirror. You will find the answer to that question. We will have to pay so that the schools can return more profit because of this over the next 20 years.
Why does a bank loan you money for buying a home?
Out of the goodness of their heart.
Because they make more money.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like this, Ohio State does not need this. So why wouldn't you stand up and say no to it? Because there's no way this helps Ohio State. No way at all that this helps Ohio State. Also, you want to complain about being in bed with Fox and getting big noon games and all of that? Mm-hmm. Wait till you have this private investment group that's like, hey, we want you playing here because this is going to get us more money. We want you playing here because this is going to get us more money. Like, there's nothing. I can't believe I'm about to say this, but good job out of you, Michigan, and you, USC. And you know what, Reese? If I'm them, I'm not going independent.
Yeah.
Who's your biggest competitor? I'm going to the SEC. You really hit them where it hurts.
If they're interested, yeah.
So there's no really way out till 2036 for either of them. So it's a long way out.
There's always a way out, right?
If you write a big check.
There's always a way.
If you write a very big check. Yeah, if you can write a very, very big check. USC's issue with it seems to be the fact that in this current model, Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State are going to get more than everybody else going forward. And I think that bothers USC, and it should. It should bother USC. It should bother Oregon, too. Because they're on that same level with those other ones. And so it should bother them. Michigan's beef is clearly the same beef that we all have. That why we don't need this. Why are we having to prop everybody up? It's my understanding, though, that Ohio State's view of this is this will get the influx of cash, which they don't necessarily need, but it's always nice to have more of, and that Ohio State will essentially take a leadership play, and this is probably where Michigan's having a little bit of beef here, that Ohio State is going to have a leadership play on what this conference looks like in the next 5 to 7 years, and inevitably the way it ends up. Because in order to
already have that.
But they've passed on that bake for 30 years. They've just stood in the shadows and allowed others to run things. And so it feels like Ohio State is finally taking some leadership on that and being given that leadership within the Big Ten. Inevitably, for these schools to maximize professional football at the minor league level, which is what college football is now, they need to be unified on their grant of rights deals. So in other words, the SEC and the Big Ten are going to have to go together to the television partners. And by the way, who the hell knows if it'll even be television by 2036. It'll all be streamers. It'll be that. They need to walk in there like the NFL does and say, this is what we're worth. And what you're giving up with this private equity is a portion of that. That's what you're giving up with that. So that's my understanding of it. I don't think Ohio State needs to do it at all. They have very smart people up there, and they clearly feel like they do. And I think some things have changed in the last 30 days, 45 days on this, which has given them assurances that they will have a ton of power running this league and the future of this league and the future of college football to come. Like it or not, that feels like where we're headed on this one. All right, coming up next, a lot of chaos in college football over the weekend. Starting to get a pretty good idea of what this 12-team playoff could look like. We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We're the girthiest radio station in the history of radio.
Uncomfortably girthy.
This promo is uncomfortable.
The Fan, Ohio's girth destination.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And Tybus.
Could you imagine being a college kid and getting a Venmo for $1 million? I'd shed tears. I cry.
Oh, I
T-Bone and Tybus Mornings on the Fan is sponsored by Awaken 180 Weight Loss.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
An early taste of winter for us today. We will see chances of snow showers throughout the morning into the early afternoon, with daytime highs only getting up into the upper 30s and with windy conditions feeling like we're in the 20s. For tonight, some chances of snow showers, otherwise mostly cloudy skies. Lows in the 20s, but with breezy winds, we feel like we're in the teens. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
1, 2, 3! Football season is weird because we actually look forward to Mondays. It's Reaction Monday.
Sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
The Fan. Distilled sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are, and we are proudly sponsored and brought to you by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for over 78 years. Holidays coming up, Buckeye Jewelry starting at just $99. Their official supplier. They're the best. Tell them Bo sent you. You get that VIP experience. I promise you that. I got an interesting, and I think this is really on point, Caleb, on social. With this capital, I think they want to create a Big Ten enterprise, which I think I mentioned. If they do this, I think the SEC will follow, too. I remember people didn't like the idea of the Big Ten network. Now SEC and ACC have their own networks. Yes, I do think you will see capital deals. Here's the thing that I think is going to be very fascinating for Ohio State in this over the next 5 to 10. Does Ohio State think that the Big Ten needs to add teams to improve its brand? Because I don't think that the SEC has to. We talked about that. We went through it last week. I think we had the top 26 rated college football games of this season, and 21 of them were SEC versus SEC. So they don't need to add teams. Their 16 is strong. You, the collective you, the public, is watching them in droves. The Big Ten does not have that. So in order to maximize your investment from business partners going forward, media rights, grant of rights deals, does the Big Ten need to take on teams? And is Ohio State now, it's my belief Ohio State will have the biggest voice in the room on this, which could be why another reason why Michigan is saying no to all of this. As if you are Top Gun Ted and Ross, do you look around and say, all right, who are we adding by 2032? To give us more television shows? The answer to that, based on our conversation last week, would clearly need to be start and end with Notre Dame. And if you want to go south, then it would be Miami. Those are the two that have rated outside of the SEC footprint that you'd be able to attract. So that's something to watch on this, because I think the SEC is not going to add anybody, because I don't think they need to. I think they're at 16. They have the right 16 in their mind. You're watching Ole Miss, Georgia, for God's sakes. 7 million people watching this stuff. Like, they don't need to add anything. They're good.
I will say this, though. If a Notre Dame fell in their lap, or like we talked about Michigan and USC,
yeah,
said they don't want to be a part of this moving forward with the Big Ten, like if those teams became available and fell in their lap, I think they would say yes.
They'd take Michigan. I don't know if they'd need to take. I don't know why they would take USC. They don't need them.
I do wonder with.
They've already tricked you. They have you believing that Ole Miss is a better brand than USC, and you bought it.
If you're
watching those games. You're watching USC. You're watching Ole Miss, Tennessee.
If the Big Ten went to 20 schools and took a school out of Florida, maybe they did go Miami. And then what does that become of the ACC? And if a school like Florida State becomes available, or if the SEC is interested in the basketball side of things with an ACC, a collapsing ACC,
mm-hmm,
do they look at Duke or do they look at North Carolina and say, sure? Clemson, maybe, but
I don't think they need them.
They don't need them, certainly no. But
and then you have to split the money one more way.
Extra, maybe, and that's where you could go to ESPN and say, well, we're adding all of this, so let's open up. The, and if they go private equity too, because college football is so copycat that if Big Ten goes private equity, does the SEC say, well, we can find a deal too?
Yeah.
And just somebody going and getting some Saudi money. Because it's been talked about for so long.
It's coming.
That eventually someone's taking a big old bag of Saudi money, and we're all going to hate it. It's going to happen.
It's coming.
I wonder for the Big Ten that they, and by they, I guess I mean Top Gun, Teddy, and Ross, look at teams that they would like to have, understanding they can't kick anybody out. Because I think that's what it would be there. Like, if you could give them whatever they wanted, they'd say, all right, we're just going to remove teams and replace them with teams.
If we're playing this game, it's time to do that. If we're playing this game and it's big boy, and it really is, we're not worried about athletics anymore. This is a money game. These are pro sports. See you later, Purdue. See you later, Rutgers. It's time. If
Maryland,
this is,
get rid
if,
of him.
If
get
this
out.
Is what we're doing, it's time to play hardball.
Yeah, that's where, I mean, that's I lined that
that's
out last
what this,
week.
This does.
Like, get rid of him. Like, we don't need to carry dead weight anymore in this league. I do wonder if the USC beef to this has something to do that this is the University of California Trust. Because they're not in that. That's UCLA. Cal's in that. But USC's private. They don't have anything to do with it. I wonder if there's some reservation to that. And I do wonder if that trust would say, hey, you sure you don't want the University of California in it?
No.
This is the type of stuff that you, and of course we don't,
no.
But these are the type of things that happen when you take money from people. They want something in return. Money's never free, kids. It's never free. It's never free.
It just screams of like the problems that have gotten college athletics to where they are now, of people every 5 or 10 years signing up for things that they're not going to have to deal with the consequences of. 2046, do you think anybody in charge of any of these institutions and athletic departments is going to be around?
No. God, no.
2036.
No.
Nimular on the YouTube chat just said the Live 10.
Someone make a logo.
Yep.
That's fantastic. You know, it's
put it
same,
on a t-shirt.
It's the same logo, basically, because the
it
LIV,
is.
I mean, it's perfect.
It's true. It works perfectly. It's perfect.
Greg Norman, Live 10 Conference Commissioner.
Here we go.
What was your favorite college football game you watched Saturday?
Well, it was Ohio State Purdue.
Other than that.
And I, you know, from, let's just go week 10 in the college football, because Ohio beat Miami on Tuesday.
You did. You got a nice
Battle
of the Bricks, I believe.
Was the battle at Ohio, second straight win over those villains from Miami. I mean, I think it has to be Indiana-Penn State. Best game of the weekend.
Penn State showed up.
Yeah.
I felt sick for those kids. I did. Played their tails off. Battled. And then once I saw Indiana ball under 2 minutes, I went, oh, God. We all know how this is going to end. Now, it ends with one of the greatest catches you'll see. I mean, that's an incredible. The stills of that catch are similar to the Jeremiah one you sent.
Mm-hmm.
Where just his contortion of his body was just stupefying. And the crazy thing is that even if Indiana would have lost, they're fine. They're more than fine. I mean, I think Ohio State and Indiana are locks no matter what happens the rest of the way. But that was a crazy finish to that game. And I felt sick for the Penn State seniors because it clearly was their Super Bowl.
I'm still not sure, and I've gone back and looked at that catch quite a few times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still not sure if I believe it would have been his right foot that was closest to the sideline. I'm not sure if that hit inbounds or not, but it's crazy that it was the back foot, like the wrong foot is the one that came down inbounds for sure.
Yeah.
Like that was a crazy catch. I think it's possible that the Big Ten won and lost the college football weekend all in one, because I think the two best games were that Indiana-Penn State game and the Iowa-Oregon game.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, Iowa and Washington losing really hurt the Big Ten and their chances at getting four in the college football playoff. It doesn't mean they won't. It just hurt. That took two teams out of the mix.
It did, yeah. And so now it's USC and Michigan are kind of the only ones that are going to join, potentially Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon. Those would be the two. But you're going to need USC to probably beat Oregon close in order to try to get in.
And Texas won the weekend without even playing.
God. I'm so tired of it. And I do think the Texas team we played week one was pretty dang good. And then I think they got broke. But they have the idea that they move up three spots on a bye. On a bye. And they're at Georgia this weekend. So, you know, that may come home to roost for them. The one thing I will say from an SEC perspective, I do think that Alabama is good. I think they are in that league. That's the only one that I look at and go, yeah, they can go toe to toe with the Bucks. That team is right. I think Bama's really, really close. Their loss to Florida State is absolutely stupefying, which lost again this weekend at Clemson. And I think Texas A&M, that was an impressive win to me because they played kind of, Missouri's kind of played everybody close, and Texas A&M went to Missouri and put it on them. I mean, it was 38-17, but it's 24-7 after three, and they kind of cruised. So I thought that was a really nice win for Texas A&M at Missouri. So those things jumped out. I also don't want to not give some flowers to Texas Tech. When we picked it, Bake, you saw 10.5 and go, what, this is too easy. It's too easy. Somebody mm-hmm. knows something, and it was a beat down. That defense can go. They can run it, and very likely are going to host a playoff game, which is going to be crazy in Lubbock. But that is a team that is – they are kind of the poster child for the new NIL model, them in Indiana. Like, hire a good coach, throw a bunch of money at it, and you can do anything anywhere. And Texas Tech's an example of that. They got that landman money.
Just real quick, did you – the Texas Tech uniforms are really cool. The Patrick mm-hmm. Mahomes, his logo's really dumb.
I didn't even see it.
Yeah. Give it a look in the break, but it's a okay. dumb one.
All right. Austin Ward in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
He knows everything about the Buckeyes. He's been offered tens of dollars by a certain team to spill his secrets. He's told that certain team to go to hell.
Damn you all to hell!
He's Austin Ward.
Sponsored by High Bank Distillery, your destination for handcrafted cocktails, locally inspired dishes, and award-winning whiskey war. Learn more at highbankco.com.
All right, buddy. I promise you we're going to do some football, but in a those search situations, like good news or the bad news, always give me the bad news first, and this is kind of our version of that. You and I probably 6 weeks ago or so, and we were talking about this private equity investment, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think we were both kind of like, yeah, we think Ohio State's not for that, but they're kind of letting Michigan USC take the lead. Well, something's changed in the last couple of months here, and now Ohio State is for it. What is your, I kind of went through it over the last couple of segments, the way I understand why they're for it, and that doesn't necessarily mean I am. Where are you with it?
I almost feel like, Bo, that over the last 6 weeks, there was just a sense of inevitability. Like, I almost don't consider this Ohio State approving of the private equity, if that makes sense. It's just like, well, this is what's going to happen, and the Big Ten is probably going to do it no matter what. And we've had a ton of other conversations about Ohio State's vote, Ohio State's influence being a deciding factor more and more increasingly for Tony Petitti and the Big Ten. And in this case, it was just like, everybody needs money, including Ohio State, and this is one way that it's going to happen. So I don't like it. I know you don't like it. And I think it's more of a matter of, you know, Ted Carter and Ross Bjork sort of having to hold their nose and go forward with it. They had pinned some hopes of like, let's just not say anything. Michigan and USC are going to be enough of a hindrance here that they don't have to necessarily take a side. And that has clearly not been the case here. And the way that they're trying to proceed without Michigan and USC potentially being included, or at least that being on the table at this point, tells me that it wouldn't have mattered what Ohio State said one way or the other. The Big Ten was going to do this because everyone else needed that influx of capital, and they're going to get it. So whether we sign off on it or not, whether Ohio State likes it or not, they're barreling forward with it because that is the world we live in now. And it's incredibly stupid because it's only going to keep going to funding these absurd buyouts for coaches and not anything that matters.
No, you're exactly right. And I guess you and I are aligned. I know we're aligned on this because I agree with you. I'm like, I feel like if Ohio State was like, yeah, we're not doing this, then that's the end of it. Like if Ohio State, Michigan, and USC say, yeah, we're out, well, what do you got left? So, yeah, the way I understand it, though, they are going to take a massive driver's seat push on this going forward in terms of what this conference looks like. So we'll see. I'm not for it. I know you're not either. On the field, this felt like a scrimmage to me, bud. Felt like a scrimmage.
Well, I said that to Ryan Day after the game, and you'll be surprised to know that he didn't really love it that I phrased it that way.
I bet he didn't.
No, I tried to hedge it in a way because I do know, I mean, RJ was on a recruiting trip. Ryan Day has a ton of respect for Barry Odom. He's never going to trash an opponent, certainly not a Big Ten one. He's certainly not going to diminish any road opportunity that his team faces. And I knew all that. I wanted to make sure that that was out there. But, like, from the very first drive, when you see Riley Pettijohn out there on defense in place of either Peyton Pierce or Ardell Reese or both, when you see, you know, the decisions that they made to hold out Carnell Tate, Phillip Daniels, Tywan Malone didn't play in this game. You could go down the list. Like, they were clearly not concerned about the outcome of this game, and they didn't have any reason to be. They could have won with all of the backups out there. They could have let Lincoln Keenholz potentially play this whole game if they wanted to. We did see him make a cameo. So, you know, I didn't expect him to, you know, sign off and endorse the verbiage that you and I are using right here. But the way that they treated it, certainly they acted as if it was a scrimmage. And that's fine because, you know, we can look and say, well, they could have won this game by 50. We've said before, we've said nine times now, really, there are no style points that are necessary. The just win mentality is more valuable than ever. And Ohio State put together a plan to do that that wasn't going to tax them and not going to put them in harm's way, additional harm's way, for two games from now in the Big House or beyond once that postseason push ramps up. So it's all continued about different expectations, different goals from every opportunity when Ohio State goes out there. They got an answer about what the depth looks like at tackle, which was encouraging with Ian Moore. They got an opportunity to see Mylon Graham and Bryson Rogers do some things at wide receiver that they might not have otherwise been able to. Edric Houston returned to the starting lineup and was, you know, he continues to be on the rise here late in the year. So those are the things where you look at it. Was the game itself memorable? Absolutely not. They turned the score off on the scoreboard as soon as it was over, and I basically forgot what it was at that point, too.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of things inside of it that you take as real positives because Ryan Day has, I think, done an incredible job of, like, it's almost like NBA-style load management has arrived for Ohio State. Yep. Not every team can do it this way, and he's doing a very good job, I think, of managing that.
You and I could take that Q&A and cut it, and we could play it Monday. Next Monday, because you're 30.5 point favorites over. No, I don't. I like doing a show on a Monday. I like a reaction Monday. But here's the thing that's tough, bud. And we won't. I'm going to ask you something. We're not going to know the answer to it until Ann Arbor.
Yeah,
we're not.
Right.
But here's what. And I do think this is a fair question. How can you be at your best if you it is not demanded of you to be at your best leading up to when it is required?
Yeah.
That is the challenge. Now, Ryan won a national title, so he knows what he's doing. Like, he knows what he's doing. But from my perspective, that's where I'm like, can you be at your best in 2 weeks when you're not at your, when you don't have to be at your best leading up to it, really at all?
Yeah, no, I think that that's, when we're talking about the previous part of this with, you know, managing reps and in some ways coasting through these games to get to the talent equated matchup situations. You know, that is the fair and obvious question. Is Ohio State battle-tested enough to get through the playoff? Even so, if you look at a year ago, we know that they had the two high-profile slip-ups. But those were, you know, one was a fistfight in a rivalry game, and the other was a team that they wound up seeing again in the playoffs. So even though they lost those games, you couldn't say, well, they're not battle-tested. They were in four-quarter battles. They were even in them in Nebraska when they weren't expected to be in the middle of that season. So that has not been the scenario that these Buckeyes have found themselves in. They're not in four-quarter games. They're not being pushed to their limit. And you can say, well, that's that's potentially it comes down to your matter of perspective. Do you think that it's better to be rested and ready and then to play your best football in the playoff, or do you want to have concern that they have not been through some of the rigors and picked up some of the scars along the way that last year's national champions did? As you said, we won't know the answer until they get to the Big House or maybe in Indianapolis the week after that. But here's the benefit. They've managed this schedule where they're basically qualified for the college football playoff already, and they will get those opportunities to test themselves late in the year. And so I'm not going to say that it doesn't matter what happens in the Big House, because it obviously does for Ryan Day, for a team that hasn't won in that series in quite some time. But one way or another, what happens against Michigan, what happens potentially the following week against Indiana, then puts them in a spot where they have seen some of those battles, and then it is a ramp up towards the win or else games in the college football playoffs. So, you know, we'll see what that means when they get to 2 weeks from now, but it's not as if they're going to go into the playoff completely unchallenged, untested, and unproven. They, you know, those games are going to carry more weight because it's going to help them get ready, which I know sounds dismissive of the rivalry. I don't mean it that way at all, but those games then set the table for you to get ready for when it counts the most.
Did you guys have a good sense of, in the press box, did you have a good sense on the Carnell Tate absence before it was known for those of us watching on television?
Not
so on TV, we didn't know until the second quarter.
Yeah, I mean, when he wasn't out there for the first two drives and he didn't have his helmet on, you know, we were all watching and looking, and my immediate, you know, jump to conclusion there, because Ryan Day's been doing this for several years, is like, okay, well, that's a precautionary situation. Lorenzo had it a month ago, or, you know, Jackson Smith and Jigba in the past, like whatever. I mean, we've seen this happen where it's not announced, it's not put on the availability report, and then you immediately realize what's going on. You know, seeing Carnell was a little bit different in pregame than it was for, like, Phillip Daniels. When he came out for pregame, Bo, he did not have any of the knee braces on. He was at the back of the line. We're like, okay, that's a questionable thing where that is an immediate scratch. It was not until the game actually started that we got that feel for Carnell. Now, it didn't come out of nowhere, because we saw Carnell leave the stadium the week before against Penn State. I thought it might have been an ankle. It seems like maybe it's a tight, you know, muscle situation instead. But it was on the radar that could happen. So we weren't totally blindsided. We were kind of looking to see how much he would play on Saturday. But there wasn't any, like, heads up at 11:30 in the morning that was going to happen.
All right, I'll get you out of here on this one. The one thing that we can kind of say is, you know, short red zone stuff, it's hard. We're trying to look for things. We've been over this a million times. But I don't imagine that when it comes to the Michigan game or the Indiana game, inside the five, you're going to hand it to a tight end. I don't know if they're going to have a Keenholz package. My hunch is that is just to put stuff on tape for others to think about. When it comes down to it, and you're inside the five, what do you think this team will do to get six?
Saturday was the first time, if I'm not mistaken, that we've seen all year the Bison package, where they put the sixth offensive lineman on the field. They did that with Justin Terry. I think that is probably a better use of the personnel than continuing to go with four tight ends or a tight end playing fullback or any of the other permutations that we've seen of that throughout this year. I don't think that is working at the level they want. Interestingly enough to me, Bo, when they put Lincoln in there, it was the lead block of C.J. Donaldson that had me thinking, maybe you put him at fullback and Bo or Isaiah or James Peoples behind that, and that opens up some different options for you. I think going back 3 years now, Chip Traynham was doing some of that for Ohio State. Like, that was really successful. I really liked that. But they faked that handoff, and then Lincoln Keenel just followed C.J. Donaldson right into the end zone. That was the one that planted the seed for me. You know what he can do? He's piling up, you know, vulture touchdowns like nobody's business. If you're playing college football fantasy and you have C.J. Donaldson, congrats to you, because every week you can bank on that touchdown. But that's the one to me, Bo. It's like, that's an idea that I think is planting the seed for some things that will probably be more effective than handing it to Nate Roberts. He's been really good in the red zone. I know he's got a fumble. I know he's not had the explosiveness between the 20s, but C.J. Donaldson is doing his job down there, and he's probably – you know, the pivot point where this thing could be unlocked in a different direction. Now, I don't think that's just continuing to keep him at running back. And I don't think that you're going to need to see a lot more Lincoln Keenholz, because Julian Sain can operate most of that stuff pretty effectively and gives you more as a passer. I'm not in favor of rotating quarterbacks. It did work on Saturday. Can't argue with the results, but I wasn't focused as much on Lincoln as I was C.J. Donaldson.
All right, buddy. You're the best. Thanks for your time. We'll do it again next week.
All right. Appreciate you, buddy. Have a good week.
All right, there he goes. Austin Ward of the Beat with Austin Berm, the Roosters live show on YouTube. Thing or not a thing coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The sound of Paul Keel's calling a Buckeye game is erotic.
Oh, yes.
Your home of the Buckeyes, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Do the holiday parties tell?
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Juice, Wheel, Football Talk. Just two guys who aren't afraid to say what needs to be said.
And that's how she wrote.
Sponsored by Riverside Bank of Dublin.
Now streaming mornings on YouTube and 10 TV Plus. Attack and dominate.
Hi, I'm Dr. John.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on Reaction Monday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
All right, we'll start this with a couple of Ohio State notes. Ryan Day's weekly press conference usually comes your way Tuesdays at noon. Well, programming note, tomorrow Ryan Day's press conference will come your way Tuesday at 11 a.m. During our show.
How about that?
Thing or not a thing.
Big thing for AR and Maddie. Gotta do a 3-hour Tuesday show now.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah. Big thing for those two legends. Yeah, we haven't had to do that. Do we know why they moved it?
No, not yet.
Yeah, have not heard.
Interesting.
Made our Tuesday a little easier.
I mean, it could just boil down to Ryan Day wants to do it at 11.
We get the tap dance Tuesday this week.
Yeah, we'll get it. We'll follow AR's lead. We'll supply you with an over under on an out time, and we'll do the best we can to nurture the Ryan Day press conference on the 1 week that it shifts to 11. That's fine. Used to do the Monday one, the Michigan week one. It used to be always on Monday. As opposed to Tuesday, but it's been at noon for a long time. I think the Tress ones are always at noon, if memory serves too, going back a long ways. So yeah, we'll be ready.
Just looking at my computer screen right now, I'm on FanDuel, and they have Heisman Trophy winner odds.
Okay,
at +165, Fernando Mendoza, quarterback at Indiana, Julian Sain, quarterback at Ohio State. Yes, their odds are even.
Yeah.
Ty Simpson +500. Marcel Reed, quarterback at Texas A&M, +850. Diego Pavia at Vanderbilt +2,000. Jeremiah Smith +3,000.
That's the one.
Thing or not a thing.
That's the one. Here's what I think could happen. I think all these quarterbacks could cancel each other out, and everyone will just go. And by the way, this might be the right thing to do anyway. What's it say on your ballot? Most outstanding player in college football. If he keeps doing what he's doing, which is batting the ball in the air, catching it on his while he's sitting on the ground, and 10 catches for 130 and a touchdown, he keeps doing that. And he does some of that in the Michigan game, and he just keeps doing it. The quarterbacks could cancel each other out, and Jeremiah Smith will end up with the stiff arm. I think it's very much in play. Very much in play. Provided, now, if Mendoza goes undefeated and beats Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game, then give him the prize.
Game That's over.
It. That's it. But short of that, those odds, 3,000 to 1. Is that what you said?
Yes.
+3,000?
+3,000.
30 to 1.
30 to 1. That's great value. Massively great value.
This is what we were kind of talking about, right? With that Fernando Mendoza, Julian Sain. They're going to steal votes in the Midwest from each other. let alone Julian's going to have votes stolen from his own wide receiver. Mm-hmm. If Jeremiah Smith has a shot to get back into this thing, he needs more games with 10 catches next to his name, 9 catches. Because no matter what you say, he's had games where he's had more yards this year, but that catch number... Just, I think when you see 10 catches, it's like, man, he must have dominated that game, right?
He did.
There's numbers here that people want to see, and I think Jeremiah is going to need games like that the rest of the way, and he's going to need that moment. We've talked about it. He's had him, the catch in the Penn State game, that catch against Purdue. He needs that in a game that matters, and he needs that in the Michigan game, quite frankly, if he wants to get in there.
Oh, he's in there, and I think there's big value on him right now. The fact that you're getting the consensus best player in college football at 30-1 is great value.
The value is awesome.
Stunning value.
It was reported Sunday that UCLA has finalized a deal for its football program to play home games at SoFi Stadium starting in 2026. The reporting adds the school's going to pay a buyout of $60 to $80 million to shift football games from the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, where the Bruins have played since 1982. The move aims to tackle low attendance and the 26-mile distance from campus by offering a closer 12-mile venue at the modern facilities amid the program's $220 million deficit. Fans and alumni are opposed to the change, mourning the loss of Rose Bowl traditions. Pasadena has sued over alleged contract breach, seeking over $1 billion in damages. Thing or not a thing?
So the city of Pasadena is suing the University of California? University system, is that what we're led to believe? So I was not aware of this, that UCLA from 1928 until 1982 played their home games at the Coliseum in Los Angeles, that them and USC kind of alternated who would play, and then they shared it with the Rams and the Raiders at 1.2, and then that became untenable, and then they moved out to Pasadena in 1982. If you're familiar with that area, it's 26 miles, but it can take you an hour and a half. I mean, it's a long ways. It's time-wise, it's a long, long ways. Here's what I'm curious about this. If UCLA, if they do this, and apparently they've finalized it, and they're going to move to SoFi, and I get it from their perspective, from their fans and trying to have home fields and all of it. What happens to the Rose Bowl? Like, does the Rose Bowl go away as an entity? How do you keep upkeep on something that's used once a year and for some concerts? Like, that doesn't seem like enough. It's the best venue on the planet. It's as if God created a stadium to play college football in. It's also incredibly valuable real estate that's just sitting there. And if you're only, how do you justify it if you're the city of Pasadena for one game a year? They need a tenant.
I'm guessing you'll see maybe more of those concerts, Bo. Because they kept it up for years, right, without something in there.
I don't know. Like, what was in the Rose Bowl before?
I'm guessing you'll just see more events, and I'm guessing that the Rose Bowl and everything around it makes so much money that they're probably okay on the upkeep and the cost, but I do think probably you'll see more things in there.
Yeah, I'm just looking at, like, it's really just been the Rose Bowl game. That's it. That's kind of it, man. So, yeah, that's sad. That's a sad one. I get it from UCLA's perspective, though, too, because it is not convenient in any way. Final hour here on a Monday. We'll blitz the Buckeyes coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you haven't thought about Buckeye football today, I'm sorry to tell you that you're dead.
Our condolences. Your home of the Buckeyes.
The Fan.
This sports report.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The Blue Jackets look to wrap a four-game road trip and to halt a four-game slide. CBJ Skate in Edmonton tonight against the Oilers at 8:30. Jet Greaves looks to get the nod in net. You can hear that game on The Fan with pregame coverage at 8. Jackets are back at Nationwide Thursday hosting the Edmonton Oilers. In the NFL Monday, Week 10 wraps up in Green Bay. The Packers host the Eagles at 8:15. The Browns fell to 2-7 on Sunday with a 27-20 loss to the Jets in New York. The Bengals were on a bye. Cincinnati's at Pittsburgh Sunday at 1. In college football, Ohio State's a 31.5-point favorite. Buckeyes are back at the Shoe Saturday night hosting UCLA at 7:30. Hear from OSU's head coach tonight on Buckeye Roundtable. Ryan Day will join the program around 6:35. Coach Day will hold his Tuesday press conference an hour earlier this week tomorrow at 11 a.m. And we'll carry those comments live right here on The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Keep your friends close
and your producers closer.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Reaction Monday edition of the program. A little bit of Shelley time coming up in 29 minutes from now. Right now, though, time to blitz the Buckeyes.
Bishop and Friends present Buckeye Blitz.
Sponsored by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers. Visit Toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
All right, we do this well. What do we do well, Reese?
Well, by we, I mean the Ohio State football team dominate time of possession. 40 minutes compared to just 19 and a half for the Purdue Boilermakers. It's going to reap so many rewards later on in the season and into the college football playoff. Buckeyes had 78 offensive snaps, 47 defensive snaps.
Jeez.
I think we throw the football well. Ohio State's most teams losing to Carnell Tate, it would cripple them.
Yep.
And you sure as heck would have heard about it before the second quarter of the broadcast. But it was just ho-hum, no big deal, we'll continue to go. We'll throw Bryson Rogers in there, who has, seems like a special acceleration. We'll throw Mylon Graham in there, who could be the next big thing. Brandon Ennis, step up, have a seat at the table. Max Clair, I know it's your former team, let's get you some throws as well. We got running backs that can catch it as well and all, yeah. The best wide receiver in the country and the most accurate quarterback in college football.
Yeah, this is what this team is. This team defends and it throws it. Will they need to be able to count on the run game? Yeah, probably. You're gonna. And I think you saw in Bo Jackson the positives and negatives. Like, he's the most explosive guy, but he also missed a blitz pickup in pass pro. So that's what you're doing with a true freshman running back. Like, that happens. But they spin it and they defend it as good as anybody in the country. And that's how this team is going to go win a national title. Remember this. If all goes according to plan, Ohio State will be one of the top four seeds. In other words, they will play climate controlled games after the Michigan game the rest of the way. All climate controlled. This is a team built for a fast track. It's the way they're built. Won't beat Indiana if we continue. Let's go, Michigan. It's that time. Won't beat Michigan if we continue to do what, Reese?
Throw interceptions in the red zone. It's pretty obvious.
Dumb red zone play calling. And I'm going to call it dumb because there's no need to be handing off to your tight end. There's no need to be forgetting about four. I don't understand why when you are this good, you need to overcomplicate things. And I feel like that's what they're doing, is overcomplicating it.
Yeah, we're all on the same page here. It's short red zone, 6 yards and in, 5 yards and in, that type of stuff. My belief is that they can throw a slant or a fade to Jeremiah anytime they want down there. And they're just choosing not to because they don't want, maybe they don't want it on film. I don't know. I don't think you're ever going to hand the ball to a tight end against Michigan or Indiana. I just don't think that's ever going to be the case. The Bison package is interesting. I like what Austin brought up with CJ being the lead blocker on that. So maybe that's something that there's something to that a little bit. We'll see. But yeah, that's it. It's just short red zone.
Is the tight end you're handing the ball off to in that game, in that stadium, wouldn't it have been Max Clair?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't have it on my bingo card.
It was weird.
That. Yeah, I'd like to see more of what, Reese?
Joshua Padilla at right guard.
Yeah, you've been the right guard bureau chief.
I know he's got to be healthy, but, you know, maybe. that's all I got. Joshua Padilla at right guard.
Not a good time for Tegra to have a couple really bad
Not a good time for a bad
that
time,
game.
That's true.
I want to see more Bo Jackson in the red zone. I understand that C.J. Donaldson's 230 pounds, and he's supposedly the bruiser, but Bo Jackson never falls anything but forward.
Yeah,
he's always moving forward, and when you need a yard, I'd kind of like to have that guy getting the ball more.
I just like to see more competition. I mean, I just think it sucks that you're going to play three straight games where you're a 30-point favorite or more in league play. It's a bad job out of the league. They really didn't do Ohio State any favors with this schedule. Or maybe they did. Maybe you like it. I suppose if you're Ryan Day, you like it. Like you just kind of, as long as you keep the standard up in the building and keep them off anything that lets them know how bad these teams are, maybe it's the perfect way to go into all of this. But it's a tough watch week in and week out to watch games where that are decided before the ball is even kicked. Courtesy Carr, who gets yours this week, Reese?
I'm going to give it to Carlos Lachlan. I've been asking for better pass protection out of Bo Jackson. I think you got a little bit this week. I also, you know, think it's a shame how they had to call back that 70-yard touchdown run because, what, technically a block in the back, but man,
that sucked, didn't it?
It felt like more of a TSA kind of like pat down that on guy that defensive
had,
back.
That guy had already overran the cut anyway.
Yeah.
He was not in the play at all. I mean, just, yeah, sucked.
For me, it's Tyler Bowen.
Mm-hmm.
To have your starting right tackle out, your sixth man who has been playing a lot. And the offensive line was still pretty good. I know it's Purdue, but we saw Ian Moore in there at right tackle starting. We got to see a little Ethan Oneonwa at right tackle. George Van Sickle got in there as well to play some right guard. They still rotated there some to have this many guys ready. And as we saw last year, you need that on the offensive line. I think what Tyler Bowen has been doing is a pretty good job.
Print it. That's what I wrote down, too. I thought, like, the depth at tackle especially, I thought they really played well up front, and he's done a spectacular job with that group. Game balls on offense. Who gets yours, Reese?
Jeremiah Smith. 10 targets, 10 catches. He did one where he was tackled by a defensive back and then just caught it while he was seated. Mm-hmm. And then the touchdown, you couldn't draw it up any more perfect than that throw and the catch by four.
Yep. Can you believe we still have another year of those two?
That's insane.
We are truly blessed here.
That's ridiculous.
I know this technically is an offense, but it puts points on the board. I'm going to give it to Jaden Fielding. He had a career-long 49-yarder, mm-hmm. hit a 45-yarder, made all of his extra points. If there's one thing I think all of us might have had a legitimate concern with on this team, it was special teams. And if when you needed it, could they hit a 50-yard field goal? Well, 49's not 50, but it's pretty darn close. We've picked on the special teams a lot, and Jaden Fielding maybe a little. Let's give him his flowers. That was a heck of a week for him.
Yeah, I wrote down Jeremiah as well, but I did want to say this about Julian. The boys were all in bed, and I don't remember what Amy was doing, if she was trying to put one of them to bed or something, and I'm like, I'm going to throw on NCAA college football. I haven't played it since September. I'm going to play a game, and I played the game of, can I be as good as Julian on the game as he is in real life? So I played Texas, and he went 31 of 44 for 404 touchdowns, but he did throw a pick. And I said, I can't be, because he completes 80% every time out. So I can't complete 80% on that game. I can't do it. It doesn't work, but he can in real life, which is crazy.
Wait a second. You mean your wife's name isn't the blonde? You fooled us all.
All these years. Game balls defense. Who do you got, Reese?
I was going to combine special teams and defense, much like the NFL does. Jaden Fielding.
These are all scrimmage games.
In fact, in a two-minute drill where that's the best result, it points on the board, and you'd wonder, a 49-yard field, but I don't know if that's in Jaden Fielding's range. Turns out it was. He was great.
I really had a hard time with this one because this defense is just so good, and I didn't know if anybody really stood out. We didn't see a lot of Arville Reese this week. They were rotating guys. I'm going to give it to Caden McDonald, though. That guy's a game wrecker in the middle of the defensive line, and he may not always get all of the stats, but he is a difference maker. You're starting to see in some mock drafts him as a late first-round pick, possibly. Mm-hmm. It's a heck of a rise for K-Mac.
Yeah, it really is. I went Caleb on this one. I mean, you could do it every week. But if you look, Jordan Reed, ESPN draft analyst, did an incredible breakdown of how Patricia really unleashed him in this game yesterday and just how good he is. And we've talked so much about Julian and Jeremiah because they're going to be in the middle of the Heisman thing. But Caleb Downs is going to be a consensus first-team All-American again, and he's going to be a top-10 pick in the NFL draft. And what they are able to do with him, I think you're just scratching the surface of the way they're going to use him in games that are real threat games. All right, Big Ten threat level. Who in the league impressed this week, Reese?
Indiana. For the first time all time, they went to Happy Valley and got a win at Penn State.
Isn't that something? Folks, did you hear what Reese said? Repeat. First time ever.
In the history of college football, Indiana had never won a game at Beaver Stadium.
Crazy.
Till Saturday.
I was a little down on Dan Lanning in Oregon after their performance against Wisconsin. Just didn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a pretty nice win over Iowa. I think Iowa's a pretty good football team.
They had no receivers. Oregon didn't. They're all out.
That throw, by the way, that Dante Moore made.
Behind the ear hole?
I mean, that couldn't have been any better.
No. Really impressed by Oregon getting a guts out win. Dante Moore, incredible in the last drive, the throw that we talked about. Penn State, a little bit of fight. Good job out of you. I thought maybe they would, and they did. They showed a little bit of fight and pride. And, yeah, that's where we are with Penn State, as we give them roses if they show a little fight and pride against Indiana at home. But they did. And USC, there was no doubt. They buried Northwestern on Friday night. And they made me look good because I think I picked the score exactly. So
exactly.
I'm appreciative of that. You have our attention now, Reese. Nationally, who around the country has your attention?
It had been the first time I'd put eyes on Texas Tech for a four-quarter football game.
Yeah.
And I do understand, you know, the hype. Jacob Rodriguez is a hell of a linebacker, and there's going to be votes and points from the southwest corner of our country that are going to go to him in Heisman voting.
Reese, I've got the same answer as you. It's Texas Tech. Outside of their one loss to Arizona State, where they did not have their quarterback, they've buried people. I mean, their games haven't even been close. If Baron Morton's in the game, Texas Tech is scoring points, and they are routing folks.
Yeah, they're what I think people thought Miami would be. That's what they are. Yeah, they are dominant. You guys went that way, so I'll just give a little bit of flowers to A&M for really bombing Missouri on the road. That could have been a tricky one for them. They left really no doubt, and A&M looks like they're finally being what I think a lot of us who thought of them as a sleeping giant would be, and Mike Elko deserves a lot of credit. And by the way, not a single person was saying that's a perfect hire when they hired him. And think at how good a job he's done there in a couple of years. Win it all grade for this team. What do you got, Reese?
Well, it's an A+.
Yep.
You can't get any higher.
Yeah.
We're almost to the point where it's like if they don't, it would be shocking, which is absurd.
I think that's where you are, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of where we are. Speaking of absurd, the end yesterday in the Meadowlands between the Browns and the Jets, the end, the beginning, all of it. We'll try to make sense of it coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We know everything about you.
We know you love the Buckeyes.
We know you love the Jackets.
We know you're wearing a red shirt.
I just freaked the hell out of someone. The Fan.
Thanksgiving is a time to...
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Your favorite fan shows are on YouTube.
Along with those fake YouTube ads like Chew This Gum and It Grows New Teeth.
Experience the splendor of Bose sitting in his closet. Timmy Hall's gaudy gold chains. And Matty Ice wearing a coat in 90-degree weather. It's all there.
Head to YouTube and subscribe today.
Hello. Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
An early taste of winter for us today. We will see chances of snow showers throughout the morning into the early afternoon, with daytime highs only getting up into the upper 30s and with windy conditions feeling like we're in the 20s. For tonight, some chances of snow showers, otherwise mostly cloudy skies. Lows in the 20s, but with breezy winds, we feel like we're in the teens. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
The only thing better than watching football is talking about it.
So we invented Reaction Monday.
Sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
The Fan. Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast.
Or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
This is Rich Cimini. He covers the New York Jets at ESPN. Jets 27, Browns 20. Since 1950... teams had been 225-0 when holding opponents to 175 or fewer yards and not turning the ball over. The Browns are the first team to lose in that span, per ESPN research, since 1950. They are also the first team. There's a bunch of firsts in this. I mean, they had a kick return and punt return touchdown back-to-back in this game. Justin Fields, who we love forever for everything that he did here, was asked to throw the ball 11 times. He completed six of them. Well, he completed seven of them. One of them went to the Browns. Six of 11 for 54 yards. He averaged 4.9 yards an attempt. They weren't even acting like they were going to throw it. They just ran it over and over again. And then it comes down to the end when, can you win the game? Who knows? The way that they're throwing it, not probably likely, as Dylan Gabriel went 17 to 32 for 167. He didn't turn it over, but missed a lot of stuff that was there as well in terms of being able to drive the ball down the field. And you get a holding penalty from a linebacker. And when you still have just the slightest glimmer of hope and you know they're not running a play, you jump off sides. This is an impossible way to lose football games.
But it's a new one.
It's a new one. Yeah. And I know Kevin talks at some point today. I just am curious to hear what he has to say about all of this, because it's just an impossible game to lose. I mean, the New York Jets traded away their two best defensive players last week.
I wondered in the moment Cameron Thomas jumps off sides because Stefanski's barking at them. Like Stefanski showing actual emotion on the sideline or actual frustration on the sideline for once. And I wondered if like Thomas looked at me and be like, you know, bleep you, Big Kev. I'm jumping.
So
I don't know.
Tyvus was doing his pre and post game duties from here in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
So when he does that, I come in here and I get him set up and make sure if there's any issues, I'll take care of that. So I happen to be dog sitting right now at someone's house who literally is 2 minutes from Tyvus's house. Okay. So Browns game starts. I drive Tyvus. I'm like, yeah, I can just take you back. His wife dropped him off here. I was like, I can just take you back. I took him back to his house. Literally from the time I dropped Tyvus off to the time I drove the half of mile, maybe it is, down the road, went there, let the dogs out, got back inside, and turned the TV on, the Jets had returned a kick and a punt for a touchdown. Like, I turned the TV on, and I was like, they're showing the replay of the guy returning the kick, and I'm like, well, no, I just heard this in the car. Like, why are they showing this again? Oh, no. They had let a punt return back for a touchdown.
Yeah, I was listening to Andrew Siciliano on the call at one point. He said the incredulous Cleveland Browns radio network.
Oh,
after the second
good
one.
Name.
I thought that's a good line, Eddie.
Good way to get out of the break.
When they returned the kickoff, I was still in the car, and I heard Zagura. Siciliano gave some kind of stat, and Zagura said, and the Browns have already let a punt return for a touchdown this year. He's like, no other team in the NFL is doing this. And then post-game, I texted you guys, and I was like, Zagura is as nicely and professionally as he can just destroying this team right now.
It's just a stupefying loss. And it's one of those ones where, I mean, guys, they host Baltimore this week. Baltimore.
Well, they're under 500. It'll be fine. They're sticking with Dylan Gabriel, so you know what you have to look forward to.
And here's the thing: I still think there has not been enough clarity from them, because there's just no damn way that this was the plan. There is no way that the plan in the offseason was to walk into the second half of this season with a quarterback room of Dylan Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders, and Bailey Zappe. There's no way that was the plan. So how did they get to this point that this was the plan? Why did they trade Kenny Pickett? Why did they trade Joe Flacco? The position Dylan Gabriel is in is a borderline impossible one. He's a third round pick. This isn't Baker going number one overall. It's not Brand Weeden or Johnny Manziel or Brady Quinn or anybody else, Tim Couch, anybody else they drafted number one overall. It's not what it is. And Shedeur's a fifth round pick. that the entire league passed on 3 and 4 times before being picked by the Browns. So even if he goes in, why would we to assume that it would be better than what it is? Now, Dillon didn't turn the ball over, but obviously he struggled throwing and driving the ball down the field in some elements. And my guess is, I haven't even looked, my guess is up there they're going to have elements on Sunday as we have, it's November. Like, that's going to be part of it.
It is supposed to be 61 degrees here for Ohio State UCLA.
Okay. So. You get a little warm up, maybe.
Shorts weather.
November in Ohio, right? You get a little of that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know how you're going to sell this. I don't know how you sell it to... It's just a tough... His press conference today is going to be really tough. Really tough answering for all of this. And I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss because I just don't know how you have that performance and just keep on. I don't know. I'm very curious because it's not resonating, obviously. I thought Tommy Rees was all right. As offensive coordinator, I thought they got Jerry Jeudy going, which was something that, you know, we kind of had been waiting for, was to ignite that a little bit. But you all they need is special teams to be even.
Yep.
Just be even and you win the game. And too often special teams fall on their face and you're having to catch up. I mean, to lose a game like this, as I mentioned in the Samini thing, it's impossible to lose a game like this. Just impossible. It hadn't happened since 1950. My guess is they weren't keeping track of stats prior to that and weren't even paying attention to these type of circumstances. So in the modern NFL, what happened yesterday to the Browns had never happened previously. So now I will say this. It was a crazy weekend in the NFL. Crazy. I mean, I was as bad as I've ever been picking games. I think I got 3 right. We'll pick the Monday Nighter at the end of the show, but it was complete abomination across the board. There were some crazy backdoor covers, like Houston backdoor covering on a pick 6 to end the game against Jacksonville. That's just a brutal one. There was, I think, 2 or 3 that the hook got me, like 6.5 versus 6. There were a couple of those that happened. And then there's some you just got dead wrong. Like the idea that the entire afternoon window, the average score was like 40 to 20.
Yeah, Seattle-Arizona game was over like 2 minutes in.
Yeah.
Bo, I can tell you, though, you weren't the worst picking NFL games on this show this week so
it's
far.
True. 1-10 going into Monday Night Reese. Football.
I know that much.
The
The
rule that in overtime you don't have to kick the extra point after, like, Jonathan Taylor runs it. I'm like, just kick the extra point. And obviously they're not going to. But the damn Germany game was a harbinger for things to come.
Why do we continue to bet the NFL?
Because, look, we're going to get better this week. We're going to watch film. We're going to grind tape. We just need our pocketbooks to have some patience.
We'll
get there.
We all got to get better.
We're all frustrated. None of us are.
None of us played well enough.
We all need
to be better.
Yes.
I mean, got to coach better. Got to play better.
We all have to.
It's just the bottom line.
Nobody's more frustrated than I am.
We're trying. We just got to play better. We got to coach better.
We'll do heavy NFL tomorrow. The Miami Dolphins were 2-7, 10.5-point dogs, and beat the brakes off the Bills 30-13. 30-13.
It makes no sense. The Saints.
Oh.
Tyler Shuck.
Come on, baby.
27 years old.
Oh, NBC. We're driving back from lacrosse in Canton. We were in Canton for lacrosse on Sunday, and we're driving back, and he's watching on the phone, and the whole time I'm just going, yes, 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 go Saints, go Saints, go Saints. That was a big one for my my bet with him, as they now dropped to 5-5. But like the Seahawks were up 35-0 on the Cardinals in the first half. In the first half, the Rams bombed the 49ers. And even the game last night with the Chargers handling the Steelers the way that they did. It was just a crazy weekend in the league across the board. And, man, be careful out there. We'll break down the NFL in full tomorrow on the show. Jackets in Alberta. So I'll ask Jody this in 2 minutes. Usually I thought they go Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver. But this time they went Calgary, Vancouver, Edmonton, right? Is that what they did this time? Kind of switch that up a little bit.
And it doesn't make sense because they go Seattle tomorrow.
Yeah, so that I'll ask him because that seems like a lot of wasted flight out of the NHL. That's coming up in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Carpenter Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electric, and Bryant, doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan.
The Gloves. It's Shelly Time.
Sponsored by Midwest Cards. Experience collecting in a whole new way.
And Mr. Shelly, we find him. Where in the world is Jody Shelly? He's in Edmonton. Jackets at the Oil. Two ones out of the gate before we get to all the hockey. Have you eaten at the Keg on this trip? And what did Mom make for dinner?
Oh, I have not eaten at the Keg on this trip. Yeah, I forgot about the Keg. It's been, had two nice days in Vancouver and chose to go with seafood. So that was
smart.
Lovely. Mom made the electric chair meal, steak, baked potato, and Caesar salad.
God. She always delivers.
Always delivers. And it was my brother's 41st birthday celebration. So we had two sisters, brother, and a lot of kids over for Mom and Dad. Ned and Doreen were excited. And I stayed the night. And Doreen pressed my pants this morning. She was so happy to have me there. So I'm looking tight here on the road.
Isn't it great, no matter how old we get, when you go home, you're still a little kid?
Absolutely. It's nice to be pampered by Mom and Dad.
Hey, usually when you do this trip, usually it's Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, Seattle, or Calgary, Edmonton, Seattle, Vancouver. Do you know why it ended up this way, where we went Calgary over to Vancouver, then back up to Edmonton? And for geography standpoint, by car, if memory serves for me, like Calgary to Edmonton's like 3 hours, three and a half, something like that. Why is it, and then you're going to be in Seattle tomorrow. Is this the first time that you remember this one going this way?
Absolutely. And, you know, there's a difference between Mountain Time Zone, which is where we are right now in Alberta, and Pacific Time Zone, which is where Seattle and Vancouver are. But the reason I think is teams like Dallas don't have the advantage of having a team close to them. There is a slight advantage in the schedule, but every team coming in and doing Calgary, Edmonton, or Edmonton, Calgary in their minds. Also Seattle, Vancouver, Vancouver, Seattle. So you'll see teams split it up like this. Great on paper, but when you're actually going through it as, I mean, I'm just a broadcaster who does no physical activity. Mm-hmm. As professional athletes, you know, I think we got in bed the other night after the game in Vancouver at 3 a.m. Yesterday would have been nothing for the players, and here they are with it 6 o'clock tonight and then a game tomorrow in Seattle. So the schedule, to answer your question, no, I've never seen like this, right. But that's my reasoning why. That's the only thing I can figure out.
I don't think people here have any point of reference on like how big Canada is and how far it is from Edmonton to Vancouver.
It's like going Edmonton to Vancouver is probably like Columbus to New York City, but over the mountains.
Yeah.
Maybe even further.
I think it's further, Jode. I think it might be like Columbus to Atlanta.
Or never Tampa. Done that drive, but yeah, okay.
I think it's Tampa like that. Ray. It's a long ways. It's a long ways, brother. I've never done Edmonton to Vancouver. You would never do that route.
I have.
You've done that drive.
Oh, many times as a kid, yeah. I grew up on Vancouver Island for a lot of my life. Yeah, there's so much you don't know about me.
I'm trying to catch up.
We used to cover over the mountains and hit the big town of Calgary, actually. But, beautiful part of the world.
Let me ask you this, and then we'll do hockey, I promise. I didn't get a chance to talk to you in Calgary. Saddle Dome next year, and then that's it, right?
Yeah. One more visit to the glorious Saddle Dome. I remember it had a flood, like, what was that, 10 years ago now or something like that. You know, they did what they could with what they have, but it's time. I mean, it's time for that building. And the you can see the structure going up right next door, right there on the Stampede Grounds next to the Saddle Dome in Calgary. So it's exciting.
I love seeing you and Mirzi in the rafters. On the call, the first I'm always like I was watching with the boys. I'm like, fellas, he's in the roof. You got to understand.
No, he's literally we're in a gondola that sways during the game. It actually sways. You're actually moving, and there's a bar above your head. If you're sitting down, which I sit down, Steve doesn't. He stands up. If you stand up too quickly and you forget about that bar, you you're going to lose an inch or two in your height because you just jam yourself. It is. And then we had in the pregame, me, Metzold, and John Luke in the same booth, yeah. which was like elevator. It was like we were in an elevator. It was awesome. But it's the character of the building.
It is. It's awesome. All right. The play on the ice, the results haven't been there. Lost three in a row now since last time we checked. Is this one of those things? It's results are results and that is what it is. Are there red flags that are starting to crop up for you for a team that's now even Steven, 7-7?
They were hot coming into this road trip starting in Long Island. Heartbreak loss there. Tough start in Calgary. They're playing well, but there's mm-hmm. just moments in games where you're just kind of like, there's more. They're getting chances. They're getting opportunities, so that's a good indication. They know what their problems are. They're giving up a little too much high in the defensive zone where other teams are taking advantage of a switch or man on man, and you're a defenseman in the D zone, and you find yourself up at the blue line. It's just an uncomfortable position. So there's a lot that goes into that. They're a little fragile when it comes to scoring. Monahan's looking to get going. Boone Jenner's looking to get going. These are key veteran guys that when they lose, it's even more escalated, in their mind and in the team's mind. So. I like the way they play. I think they're playing good hockey. There's teams that are struggling, like the Oilers, who they see tonight, who really have not figured out their team game whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And you'd rather sit where the Blue Jackets are at, knowing what they have to do to win and knowing their team game than being in question here, getting on 16 games in the season. So I'm a little concerned because they seem a little fragile at times. Mm-hmm. And I think they need a game where everything kind of goes their own way. Like a 2-1 victory would be a beautiful thing for this team.
So you're in Edmonton now. This is a team that comes into this one 6-6-4. This is a Stanley Cup or bust type team. Why the slow start for Edmonton?
You know what? I just spent time with my dad, who is the biggest Oilers critic ever. I couldn't wait to get out of the truck. It's been like 18 hours of talking about it. And I think that
that's great.
They brought in too many new players again. They've lost personality with Evander Kane and Corey Perry. They need that jam in the locker room, that personality for this team. So there's some new guys here trying to fit in. Everything goes through McDavid and Draisaitl. They're two superstars. And when you're on a team like that waiting for those things to happen, you're not getting enough from the other players. And to me, defensively, they look black. Their goaltending isn't shored up. So there's holes in their game. They lost 9-1 last game to the Colorado Avalanche. That's 9 goals at home against and 1-4.
Wow.
So we'll see tonight really what they're made of. I expect them to come out and, be flying around out here. Mm-hmm. They still have injuries. Zach Hyman is a key player on their top line who can play with Connor McDavid. That's a big deal. When you got a guy like Hyman who can hold on to pucks and make plays with the best, fastest player in the world, that's an important piece. So they're missing 3 forwards. They've got 3 forwards on their bottom fourth line who have no experience. They made a lot of changes. Paul Coffey's not the defensive coach anymore. I don't know why. They just made too many changes to me. And it's going to take some time, right? Just like last year where they went to the finals again and lost. I think there is no meaningful hockey for these guys until April. I really don't. I think this is a tough time of year to really say, you guys got to play better. It's, I think there's a mental thing where it's like there's disappointment, heartbreak, and then there's like, we got to get through the regular season again.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
I think you're right. I think a team like this, just get in. We're
Thank
fine.
You. My dad doesn't think so. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, no, he wouldn't. He wouldn't. He wouldn't.
He doesn't want to hear it.
He's a diehard. He wouldn't. He's got all those banners he looks at up all the time. He wants to add more to it. All right, I'll get you out of here on this one. Who's in net tonight and any changes, anything that jumps out in terms of what we expect to see tonight?
The biggest change tonight is in the broadcast booth. John Davidson is going to be doing my position as color analyst with Steve Mears, and I'm on Amazon Prime in Canada because if it's on Monday, it's on Prime. Yeah. So that's a big change. We haven't seen or heard from the team yet as to what the other changes are.
Okay.
But, great to have JD in town, and he's going to be on FanDuel Sports tonight.
And I think that says a lot about you, that your backup is a Hall of Fame broadcaster. That's how good you are.
I mean, could it right? be any better? Yeah, right. It says a lot about JD to be able to come in and fill in and do something that he was the best in our game at. So
yes,
I got to go catch up with him now and see how he does his work so I can get some tips from him.
All right, buddy.
We're going to be on the broadcast together tonight, I think, at times. So that'll be fun.
Oh, that'll be great. That'll be great. Okay. We'll talk to you tomorrow from Seattle.
Oh, that's where we'll be. That's right. I'll talk to you from Seattle. You guys have a great day.
See you, buddy.
Thank
you. There he goes. A little bit of Shelly time on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. Yeah, that is a crazy traverse to go Albert to do all of that. That makes absolutely no sense. We'll get you three things on a Monday. Coming up next, Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
The Daily Ryan Day Show is brought to you locally by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers and by Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse on the Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
This is the Ryan Day Show brought to you statewide by Safelite Auto Glass. Coach, nearly 40 minutes of possession time. How much of an advantage was time of possession today?
We want to be efficient, and we want to let the run game really, let itself play out a little bit in this game. Wanted to establish it, so we ran the ball, 43 times for 170 yards, and that's part of the run game is you got to let it take effect. You got to continue to give it at bats, and we were able to do that in this game. We were explosive at times throwing the ball, but anytime you can control the game like that, it's good. You just got to make sure you're finishing off the drives.
What's the difference between running the football and running the football efficiently?
There's a lot that comes with it. And then first off, when you're looking for efficiency in the run game, you need execution, which means everybody's got to be on the same page, the timing of the back. And sometimes you got to bring your own blocker like Bo did on that short yardage play. So we'll evaluate the film and keep working to get it even more efficient.
We'll have a final comment after this.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safelite Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at Safelite.com. Safelite Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Buckeye fans, choose chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged for a smoother finish. It's got that crisp, refreshing taste that makes those moments when you choose to rise above the noise and choose chill even better. Coors Light is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics, so crack one open and take a sip. Coors Light, choose chill. Celebrate responsibly. 2025 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Beer.
Now, the officials have been talking for quite some time.
Alrighty, let's see what they have to say.
Upon further review, there is no penalty on the play. However, we have conferred and discovered that Bob, the line judge, has saved a boatload for his kids' college using Ohio's 529 plan. It is tax-free, accepted nationwide. Bob recommends we all go to collegeadvantage.com. First down!
Well, that's not entirely unexpected.
Classic Bob.
Coach, Jermaine Matthews Jr.'s interception came off a deflection. How disruptive has this pass defense been this year?
Well, it was good to see us get a turnover. When we can get our hands on balls, you can see how the game flips really fast. And Caleb made a great break on it. The ball was in the air. And then, Jermaine has a really good ball skills. He was a return guy in high school. So I thought he almost had a chance to take it back. And then once it got close, I was like, man, just hang on to that thing, put an extra ball security on it. But anytime we get turnovers like that, the game could flip fast.
This is the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
For over 37 years, Buckeye Nation has known Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse for serving the best steaks in the city. Our thick-cut, aged steaks are a staple in Columbus, with three locations in Upper Arlington, Dublin, and downtown. And just like the Buckeyes, we strive for excellence and an experience like no other. Hyde Park is proud to introduce the newly added wine room at our downtown Columbus location, where a new elegance in dining surrounds you, creating the ideal setting for any occasion or the perfect night out. Hyde Park Network is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. Go Bucks!
Around here, it's all or nothing. And Toyota's got more all-wheel drive choices than anybody. Now through December 1st, get 4.75 APR financing on remaining new 25 Corollas and Corolla Hybrids. Excludes GR and Corolla Cross. Or lease a gas-powered 26 Corolla LE for $199 a month for 39 months with $36.99 due at signing. With approved credit through TFS, tax, title, and license extra. Call 1-888-36-TOYOTA for details or go to toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
I was in foot.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, a couple of things before we pick. Obviously, nothing but love and appreciation for the great Shelly time, but he is lost on directions and mileage. So he was saying it was like the distance between us and New York, I think. Edmonton to Vancouver by car is 12 hours. So I think that's like driving to Tampa, probably, is what you're looking at. Is like, that's how far it is. So that's how little sense it makes to not just go Calgary to Edmonton, then do Vancouver, Seattle, fly all over the West. We got to pick a Monday nighter. I would take this all with a grain of salt.
Come on, it can't get any worse, right, guys?
Nah, it cannot.
It's a big-time matchup on Monday Night Football tonight as well. The Philadelphia Eagles in Green Bay taking on the Packers. We have a home favorite in this one, the Pack, by 1.5.
I have no earthly clue. I really don't. I'll just take home favorite. Give me Green Bay. Green Bay, I'll throw the 1.5.
So if you are gambling based off of our picks, go with that one because I'm gonna take Philly.
So I'll either be 3-11 or you'll be 2-10. What an awful week.
Great.
Just an awful week in picking the National Football League. What do we have in the poll today, Reese?
Daily Fan Poll asks, did Fernando Mendoza overtake Julian Sain as the Heisman Trophy favorite? This is an opinion question because per the odds, he did not. They both have the same odds. 89% of respondents to the Daily Fan Poll say no.
No. And I think what we said, there's great value, kids, right now. I'm not telling you what to do with your stuff, but I think there's great value on Jeremiah at 30-1. I think there's great value there. All right, time. Go ahead, Reese.
Well, I was just going to say real quick, I think some people took our advice because FanDuel has him now plus 2,500.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Like, it was just, there's a little bit, apply a little bit of common sense here, kids. All right, time for three things on a Monday. Hit it, guys.
One, two, three
things.
Sponsored by Buckeye Lake Marina, Central Ohio's largest selection of new and pre-owned boats. Find your next dream boat at BuckeyeLakeMarina.com.
All right, number one for me, with the snow today, it ignited my annual conversation with my wife that the 3-year-old golden retriever, Buddy Garrity, is fine in the snow and actually loves it. And no, he can't be out there for 8 hours or 6 hours, but he can be out there for 45 minutes. For him, this is all new adventure. When he makes his rounds around the property, he's able to check where the squirrels and the chipmunks are. He's able to track down things that used to be in different places. He's excited to make new pathways. It's like a kid at Christmas for him with the first snow. He's having the time of his life. She feels that it's too cold for him. His behavior tells me otherwise. Plus years of raising dogs in colder temperatures.
A delicate little pause, Bo.
Yeah.
First thing for me, so the Louvre heist that we talked about a couple weeks ago, I think it's slowly reaching a conclusion. Like, they've caught several of the suspects, but I'm not sure as of right now if they've recovered any of the jewels that were stolen in the brazen heist. But apparently the security password for the Louvre was just Louvre. Like, guys, are you Louvre 1? Are you going to update that?
Was the L capitalized at least?
Put a symbol in there?
Jesus. It's incredible.
Doesn't it have to be 8 characters, all passwords? Come on.
Maybe a Louvre exclamation point?
Man.
First thing for me, and I will say that my drive this morning coming in was not bad, but it's, since it was our first snow of the year, I will give you my little snow driving PSA. Like, you waking up late does not give you an excuse to not clean your car off, or you just being too lazy does not give you an excuse. And when I say clean your car off, make sure that all of your windows are clear, not just the front one that you can see out of, because I will say this, I know accidents happen, but if you hit me because you cannot see me because you were too lazy to clean off your windows, we are going to have a problem.
And Bake's a big dude, so that'd be a big problem. Number two for me, this is my get off my lawn moment of the show. So I watched the Buckeye basketball team on Friday night. That court's a tough watch. It's really bright. On my TV, I know Timmy Hall said it was pretty good in person, like he didn't bug him as much in person. It was a tough watch on TV. It felt like it almost was like white. It was really a tough watch. I don't know if you guys had that experience, but I couldn't watch the game on Monday because it was streaming, so I didn't get a chance to see it. But like actually watching a full game on it was a full day.
Second thing for me is from the corrections department. So I had said that the Blue Jackets are going to wrap a four-game road trip tonight. They're wrapping the four-game road trip tomorrow. And also, Ohio State is 7-2 this season against the spread. The Buckeyes did not cover against Purdue over the weekend. They also did not cover against the Ohio Bobcats back in September.
Reese, I don't want to correct you even more, but this is a five-game road trip technically for the Jackets.
It started in Long Island.
Four games on the West Coast, but it has been a five-game trip.
Thank you for that.
Second thing for me, and thank you to our fearless leader, Fish, for sending us this during the show. We talked earlier about the DeSales game this past weekend that I got to call, and the great game RJ Day had, of course, the son of head coach Ryan Day, 482 yards, three touchdowns, one of those a game winner with 5 seconds left. High School on SI has nominated RJ as one of the five high school athletes to be named Boys Athlete of the Week. He is up against a soccer player from Massachusetts and then four other football players as well. If you're so inclined, go vote for RJ Day.
Let's go. That's awesome. Congratulations out of him. What a moment. I mean, never going to forget it. School record and walk-off winner. Finally, number three for me. This weekend, we had, as a family, 9 lacrosse games and 6 basketball games. I don't even know what day it is. And yet, somehow, my kids were off today already for a, quote, teacher planning day. Great. Fantastic. Dad's working.
So now my third thing becomes a question with the Teacher in Service Day today and Veterans Day tomorrow, which I wonder if that's why Ryan Day is moving his press conference up an hour.
Maybe.
What was the plan for like a 4-day weekend?
Who knows, dude? Like they'll chase screens. We got basketball practice tonight, but I mean, you know, they can't go a month without having like four weeks in a row with 5-day school weeks. Not even a month goes by without days off randomly.
Final thing for me, everybody pray for AR because he gets another show with Adam King today. Matty Ice is out, God so bless. The Kinger is filling in. They'll talk to Jim Lachey at 12:30 and Ian Fitzsimmons on the college football weekend that was at 2.
All right, there you go. You have that to look forward to, which is nice. We are back tomorrow, Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
During this 10-second promo, Rothman will lose money gambling on something.
People like you come here and blow the family nest egg that built this town.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan.
More than a
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.